take a ride from the high desert and the great American Southwest, exclusively on Sirius XM Radio. This is Dark Matter with your host, Art Bell. Now, here's Art.
Extraterrestrial Radio. Dark Riders, welcome. I am Art Bell. What an adventure we're going to have tonight with Timothy Good. I mean, you probably know that name. Anybody in ufology circles knows that name. But I have a number of things first. Much like Obamacare website, we're having a little bit of trouble with some people getting cut off. And it's vexing, to say the least. There are various error codes one might encounter, 1001, 500 and something, 300 and something, I don't know, all kinds. So we can use your help in trying to figure out what the hell's wrong. We don't want people cut off. So if you're listening on the web, whatever you're listening on, here's what I want you to do. When you get cut off, make note of it, the time it occurred, tell me where you are, and tell me what kind of operating system you are using, and email me. This is how it could conceivably get cured. I say conceivably. So send it. Send your cutoff report, please, to Art Bell at artbell.com. That's Art Bell at artbell.com. Attention hams, amateur radio operators. Our son is going berserk. Ladies and gentlemen, our son has come alive, really come alive. There are some pretty ominous things facing Earth. We're right at the end of a long gun barrel right now. And it's amazing to see, and I'm going to see to it that you see it. Because up on my website right now, we have this lovely gal who actually looks like a network weather girl, except she's talking about what's going on in the sun right now, and she explains it really, really well. It is fascinating. There are some big storms. You might even call it the perfect storm headed toward us. There have been four large flares, and they're all headed our way. I mean, these spots are pointed right at Earth. So, you're going to want to check it out. I'm sure you'll hear things like light to moderate X-rays with proton showers possible. And you're going to watch for that occasional gamma ray burst. No, not really. She'll explain the technical side of it. And it really is fascinating. If you've ever wondered, finally, our sun is raging in the night and the day. And so that makes for wonderful conditions on the radio until the storms hit, then there'll be nothing. Anyway, you really want to see this. Go to artbell.com, click on the Sun Weather Gal. Gee, that's well done. I've never seen that before, but it's very, very well done. I am coming to the conclusion that school shootings here in America are becoming the new normal. Massachusetts, here in Nevada, little town, Sparks in Nevada. They are becoming the new norm. I mean, you hear about them all the time now. Are we going to get used to that? Are we really going to get used to school shootings in the news? Remember, we've got a ghost picture contest underway, and judging is underway, too, and it all ends this Sunday. Or the submission part of it anyway, this Sunday at noon, it's all over. So if you have a ghost story, send it to Ghostmaster. No, just kidding. Send it to Webmaster at artbell.com. If you've got a ghost story, send it to me. A one-paragraph summary is just fine, and then your phone number, and we'll call you when we do our Halloween show. Spooky matter. Well, one comet yesterday exploded. Ison, however, is still on track to amaze and or disappoint. We'll have to find out. But one comet did explode. Sometimes when they get near the sun, it's just too much for them, and they go. I was talking to somebody earlier tonight about something that, let me give you the rest of the reasons to go to the website right now. A UFO caught by multiple cameras. That's always good, right? If you're in doubt, multiple cameras in Jerusalem. That's on the website. A giant alien in Peru is on the website. An unknown but disgusting life form has been filmed intimately in North Carolina. This thing is growing in the North Carolina sewers. And it's disgusting. I mean, it's really just, yeah. It's some new life form they claim growing in the North Carolina sewers. And watch it if you got the guts. It really is pretty awful looking. No idea what it is. Don't really want to know what it is. Definitely don't want to go down. And I wouldn't be that close with the camera. I hope the guy had a zoom lens or the gal, whoever took it. Got a flash from my own company, Sirius XM. Two Sirius XM employees. I wonder if I'm supposed to read this. It's an internal memo. Well, all right. It's about something very public. Tomorrow, Sirius XM is going to launch the FM6 satellite. It's actually not the FM6 spacecraft, but satellite. And it's going up on a Proton Russian rocket from Baikonur Cosmodrome. That's in Kazakhstan, on an ILS Proton rocket. It can be viewed. In other words, you can see the launch and the spectacular success of our new satellite and or the spectacular destruction of an incredibly expensive satellite in Russia. One of those two things will happen. So if you would like to see that one way or the other, you might want to wander over to my website, again, artbell.com, and there will be live video from Russia of the launch. Pretty cool stuff, actually. All righty. Glancing, if I dare, briefly at the national news. Do I really want to do this? In Massachusetts, a teacher who was allegedly killed by one of her own class students apparently had asked to stay after school the day she was killed. This teacher was a beautiful young gal who was, her picture has been around, poor gal, who was revered by her students and shot by one of them allegedly. This is why I hate the news. Residents of a Northern California community expressed skepticism Thursday about a sheriff deputy's decision to shoot a popular 13-year-old boy who was carrying a pellet gun that looked apparently like an assault rifle. You know, I'm going to give up reading this stuff pretty soon. A former Ohio doctor accused of killing a pregnant woman last year by injecting her with heroin after she answered a Craigslist ad pleaded guilty Thursday in her death. And, of course, that of her nearly full-term unborn child. Or we can look down here. Dallas police will seek a grand jury indictment against an officer who was fired after shooting a mentally ill man in a disputed incident caught on tape. You know, I may not read this stuff anymore. And finally, something that's not what I just read. No one likes a bully, so when a recent Texas high school football game ended in a score of 91-0, one angry parent filed a complaint, a lawsuit, I guess, alleging the contest had crossed the line from tough loss to unlawful torment. shot. So they're filing a lawsuit. I mean, you know, you got to laugh at something, right? And what was there to laugh at in any of the other stories? But 91-0, unlawful torment. In other words, once they were far enough ahead, I guess the thought here is they should have had the grace to stop. But no, they just went and got as many touchdowns as they could. So it's going to be a lawsuit only in America. Boy, I guarantee only in America. Okay, Fukushima, there's a lot of really possibly negative news about Fukushima. Because TEPCO is about to try to remove the spent fuel rods from reactor number 4. Now, this is going to be one hell of a dangerous, very dangerous job. And it's going to be going on for quite a long time. These things are heavy. Really, really heavy. And there are many of them. During this period, TEPCO plans to carefully remove more than 1,300 used fuel rod assemblies, packing radiation 14,000 times the equivalent of a Hiroshima nuclear bomb from the cooling pool. The operation to begin removing fuel from such a severely damaged pool has never been attempted, ever. The rods are unwieldy, heavy, each one weighing about, get this, two-thirds of a ton. And all this has to be done, not automatically, as most things are in such a case, but by human beings. Good luck to us. Should the attempt fail, a mishandled rod could be exposed to air and catch fire, resulting in horrific quantities of radiation released into the atmosphere, and the resulting radiation will be too great for the cooling pool to absorb, as it simply has not been designed to do it. Of course, the whole pile of these things could come crashing down. That would be the worst case scenario. And if that happened, it would be an apocalypse. Reactor 4 contains about 10 times more cesium-137 than Chernobyl did. So the more you read about this, the more frightening it absolutely is. It is absolutely frightening. And one more frightening thing for you. The oarfish that are washing ashore in California are thought to be precursors of an earthquake. Now, they did wash ashore. These are deep, deep, deep ocean bottom dwellers, you know. Big, giant fish. They almost look like something alien, but they inhabit the bottom of the ocean, and the thought is when there's tectonic movement, the oarfish that like the bottom immediately detect it and take off like bandits. Oarfish washed ashore in Japan before the big one. Oarfish are washing ashore in California now, too. Extremely rare. And something to be concerned about. All right, well, I've got so much more. As I said, we have riches of material tonight. Certainly, you're going to want to go to artbell.com. First opportunity you get, obviously. If you're out there in a truck, don't do it. I know that there's a temptation when I talk about these things. All right, the Super USB Wi-Fi 3 antenna. Why should you want one of these? Well, if you're a techie like me, you're going to want it because it's the best of breed. What does that mean? Well, if you like receiving distant Wi-Fi signals and or the one you love very well, in other words, your own Wi-Fi signal, you really need this. If you're out there in a truck somewhere, this is a have to get. You need it. Why? Because you pull into a truck stop somewhere, you lick a couple of, this thing's about, 9 inches long, 8 inches long, something like that. It's got little suction cups on each end. You put it in the window, plug it in with the USB plug to your computer, and oh, baby, you're going to have Wi-Fi that just doesn't quit. I mean, this will make any laptop look sick, you know, the internal Wi-Fi receiver in it. It's that good. A little software goes in, you plug in the USB cable, and that's it. 15-foot cord, and this will do you. It's $99.95. It's the real McCoy. Call C. Crane at 800-522-8863. To give you an idea of the size, it's about the size of a ruler, right? And again, it comes with a 15-foot cable. So you can use it permanently, or you can use it, you can carry it, use it in a truck, whatever you want. Again, that number, 1-800-522-8863. The C. Crane Company makes really, really good stuff. Coming up in a moment, you've heard his name, I'm sure, now, probably all your life, or a good part of it, Timothy Good and UFOs on Dark Matter. Yes, Raging in the Night. Well, all right, coming up, Timothy Good. Timothy is regarded as one of the world's leading civilian authorities on alien phenomena, known for his integrity and his determination as a highly skilled researcher. He has lectured at the Royal Canadian Military Institute, Royal Naval Air Station, Portland, the House of Lords All-Party UFO Study Group, the Institute of Medical Laboratory Sciences, and the Oxford and Cambridge Union Societies. In 1998, he was invited to discuss the subject at the Pentagon's Defense Airborne Reconnaissance Office. Wow. And at the headquarters of the French Air Force in 2002. He has also acted as a consultant for several U.S. congressional investigations, is author of a dozen books on the subject, including Above Top Secret, Alien Contact, Alien Base, Unearthly Disclosure, and Need to Know UFOs, the Military and Intelligence. Timothy lives in London, England, and that is, I think, where we find him. Timothy, good evening.
Good evening to you, sir.
Wow. Pretty good connection, I would say. You're in London?
I am.
Well, then I'm impressed. Pretty good. Pretty good stuff. All right. Gee, where to begin? When did we last talk, Timothy?
I think, Art, if my memory serves, it was about 2005.
It's been a long time.
It might have been more recently than that, but...
No, 2005 sounds about right to me.
Okay.
So, it's really extra wonderful to have you back on the program.
Well, thank you.
And perhaps you would like to summarize everything that's happened between 2005 and 2013 today.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Can you start off there? Just kidding, Timothy.
I can certainly give some
I bet you could.
quite a bit been going on recently.
Actually, there is. I've got this wealth of UFO photographs and all the rest of it up on the website. It seems to be coming on a daily basis now. All kinds of sightings all over the place. It's kind of exciting, actually.
Yeah, good.
So how did you get into this field, you know, UFOs, aliens, that kind of thing, in the first place?
That's a very good question, Art. It goes back to the mid-1950s, would you believe, when a cousin of my mother's, a distant cousin of my mother's, a guy called Edmund C. Berkeley, visited and stayed with us in our family home, and he knew of my passion for aviation and space travel. So he said, Timothy, what do you know about flying saucers? And this guy, as I say, Edmund C. Berkeley, he was the first person to write on computers and automation. In fact, I think that was his first book back in the sort of like 1947, something like that.
Right.
And he was a highly respected guy, apparently. And he said, to me, Timothy, you like airplanes and spaceships, you need to know about flying saucers. So he gave me this book called The Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe. It was a paperback. I still have it to this day. And I was enthralled because there were all these reports from airline pilots, commercial pilots, obviously, and military pilots. And, you know, even if the pilots had been drinking, the radar sets had not. So I think you'll find in most cases where craft are reported by pilots, it's supported by radar. And, of course, that's the clincher for me, because radar actually is extremely sophisticated, far more sophisticated than people think, especially these days.
Yes.
I can remember, well, I was told by some naval military guys about 15 years ago that, and they were talking in terms of years before then, that the Americans had a very sophisticated line-of-sight radar which could actually determine the types of engines from the fan blades of Russian bear bombers.
Wow. That is a wow. They get that kind of... I'm curious, Timothy, on radar, how would that be represented, or would it be interpreted by a computer?
Well, I wouldn't know. I don't have the technical expertise to answer that one, Art. But
that's
certainly
amazing.
Certainly, the radar is extremely sophisticated and getting increasingly sophisticated, if not completely perfected by now.
Oh, I can only imagine what the top level, you know, military stuff is able to do. They're always way, way ahead of the rest of us. That's amazing. That's really amazing. You can tell the type of an engine on radar, direct reflect radar. Incredible. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I can see how your interest was sparked. Now for me, it didn't take a sighting. It was really funny, Timothy, after I got interested in ufology, really fascinated by it, I had, you know, my own little sighting or big sighting. And at that point, life changes and you know what you saw.
Yeah.
And after that, how about you? Have you ever had that moment where you saw something that was not in dispute because it was not from here?
Yes, I have. There's very few and far between over the years. But the first one was 1963 when it was, I think it was August the 1st, 1963, if memory serves me. I was sitting out in the garden of my parents' garden, and we all spotted this brilliant point of light in the sky. It was a relatively clear sky. And I turned my binoculars on it, and it was like a sort of cone-shaped, triangular-shaped object. Uh-huh. And photographs were taken by United States Air Force planes. Forget the Royal Air Force. The U.S. Air Force were there before our people, and they took gun camera film of it. And it was a very large object, just suspended, just hanging there for about an hour and a half. And as I say, clear photographs were taken. In my book, Above Top Secret, I reproduced a photograph taken by a chap on the ground who I knew, a pilot on the ground who took it through his telescope, and it's quite clear.
Okay, so
that was the first.
You personally observed this, right?
Yes, I did, for about an hour.
So, an hour and a half. That's really, really a long sighting.
Thousands of witnesses all over London and the home counties saw this thing.
So, my question is, after you had that personal experience, how did that bring you to a new level, even beyond a sort of casual interest that you mentioned, or even an intense interest from reading that book given to
you?
Yes,
definitely, no question about it. I mean, that sort of clinched it for me.
I see. So then you began investigating UFO encounters of many, many others. Is that a fair assessment of what you've been doing all these years?
Absolutely, absolutely, nonstop.
All righty. for the sake of my audience, many of whom are doubters, I would ask you, I think, how you vet when you come upon somebody and a report, and maybe you've got photography, you've certainly got stories, witness stories. How do you vet these things to decide the wheat from the chaff?
Oh, it can be very difficult. Witnesses are vital. And, of course, so the caliber of the witness becomes paramount. You need to know whether they're absolutely on the level, or they're just fantasizing, or they're just trying to, you know, pull the wool over your eyes. So you have to be very careful. But I've met a lot of very genuine witnesses. That's for sure.
I would imagine you've met both camps.
Yes, absolutely. I've lectured to what you Americans call skeptics with a K, we call them S-C-E-P-T-I-C-S. We have them over here, too.
Uh-huh.
And the amusing thing about the groups that call themselves skeptics is that they're not genuinely skeptical. They're debunkers, actually. Skepticism is absolutely warranted reaction to all this stuff, anything really, you know, bizarre and peculiar, but just to debunk it, they should call themselves debunkers rather than skeptics, because they just will rubbish everything to do with it.
Yes, well, it's been my observation. You know, I deal with a lot of photographs. You know, when you're doing a talk show about this kind of thing, you get a lot of photographs, and frankly, a lot of them are probably baloney. However, here's what I figured out. If you have a really, you know, blurry photograph of a UFO, people go, oh, come on.
Sure.
Even though somebody grabbed a camera in a hurry, probably was moving as they were in shock almost viewing this craft. And of course, you get a slightly blurry photograph. And then on the other end of the scale, Timothy, you have people very rarely, with a high-quality camera, fast film, and a steady hand, even in a scary situation, and they come up with something that's just astoundingly clear, and then that same group of people says, oh, Photoshop!
Yeah, that's it.
So, and gradients in between. So there will be no photograph that they would say, wow, looks like the real thing.
Yeah. And you know, online, I sort of check every day. I get sort of Google alerts to the UFO situation, stories in the press and media generally and everything. And it's very interesting. An awful lot of photographs are quite obviously birds that just happen to fly by in mid-flap and get caught in the camera. And unfortunately, you can look at those online every day, and people think, oh, I didn't see anything at the time. Well, you wouldn't normally if a bird zooms by, but people do capture them, and a bird like a seagull in mid-flap looks like a disc on edge. So it's no wonder people are fooled. So one has to be very, very careful. But as you know, over the years, some great photographs and film have been taken.
Oh, I know. I know. Do you have a favorite, I mean, of all the things that you've researched, do you have a favorite? One that just sails over every bar that you set?
What, a sighting or photographs or what? Sorry, can you be more specific?
Oh, I mean to be non-specific, whether it's a sighting, a photograph, a creature, witness encounters, in other words, something that just is over-the-top legit.
Well, I can only speak for myself. I have had several encounters with people who I believe were aliens, and that's the first one was in 1963, when I was touring the United States with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. And I forget exactly where we were. All I can remember is that it was about 512 miles from Tucson, something like, it was a 512-mile journey from Tucson, Arizona, to Los Angeles, and we were kindly given a one-hour stop during that 512-mile flight to get our evening meal. Mm-hmm. And we stopped at this diner. And I was with three colleagues. We were sitting by a window, and we'd got our food. And I noticed, waiting in line, not that far away, was a very petite, extremely attractive, very unusual-looking girl. And there was just something about her which alerted me. And I put out the thought in my mind, if you're from elsewhere, would you mind just passing by and giving me some kind of proof? That was all in my mind. Like a minute later, when she came out of line, she might have been carrying a cup of coffee or something like that, I can't remember precisely, but she came past the table and did a very low, gracious curtsy and bow, and then she just stood up, deadpan expression, and walked away. And, I had three witnesses with me, and they said, Tim, hi, what's that all about? How did you get to know her? And I was mesmerized, and that was the first in 63. And then in 1967, there was, in some ways, a more convincing one. I was staying at what was then the Park Sheraton Hotel. I think it's off of 7th Avenue in New York. We had a series of concerts at Carnegie Hall with the great Russian cellist Mstislav Rostropovich. And he used to conduct the Washington Symphony, by the way, as you probably may recall, and great guy. And I'd sent out a message. I sat in the lobby of the Park Sheraton Hotel, New York, and I sent out a thought, if any of you guys from elsewhere are in the New York vicinity, would you please come and sit down beside me and prove it? Well, you know, people come and go in hotel lobbies. And after about, 30, 35 minutes, this chap comes in. And there's something about him, immaculately dressed, about 5'8", something like that, maybe 5'9".
Yes.
I would say slightly tanned skin, fair wavy hair. He was absolutely immaculate. He looked at me. He came and sat down beside me. He took out an attaché case from which he pulled the New York Times, and he turned the pages over, like, every few seconds, very, very slowly and deliberately, then folded the newspaper, put it back in his attaché case, and closed the zip. So I thought, okay, here we go. So in my mind, I said, right, if you're the guy I'm looking for, would you take your right index finger and hold it to the right side of your nose and keep it there? He did immediately. He did that immediately. And people then say, Tim, why don't you talk to these guys? And
well, yes.
I just didn't feel it was appropriate somehow. But that was it. I had my proof in a way that there are people who can read your mind. And I've had, you know, a couple of other experiences. The last one was in Poland about 8 years ago, I would say, in Wrocław in Poland.
Yes.
And I was the featured guest at a prestigious debating salon. It was called the Professor Dudek's Salon in Wrocław. And I'd never been invited to such a prestigious event. And I was the guest of honor, and I had to give a presentation, and then there would be questions from the audience. And there were about 80 people there. They were mostly retired, I would say, military people. There were college professors, psychologists, who were the first to vent their wrath at me after my presentation. But that's another story. It was very funny. There were military guys there who got so outraged by the psychologists that they stood up, and I think one of them had his uniform on. And they said, you don't know what you're talking about. We guys have to chase these things. My colleague here, and he had another pilot, stood up and said, you know, I've had these things on my wing and everything. And it was very, very a lively debate. I had noticed throughout a very interesting looking person, very similar to the guy in some that I'd seen back in 1967 in New York. Similar olive skin. He was a bit thinner. He was also immaculately dressed. And I just thought there was something about him. I tried a bit of telepathy. There was no response. Anyway, he was the last person to give a short presentation. You weren't allowed to talk for, I think, more than about 4 or 5 minutes, something like that. It might have been a little bit more, I'm not sure. But he was the last person to speak. The subject of his short speech was Earth's future in space. And so I thought, gosh, this has got to be interesting. I was absolutely fascinated by what he said. So I thought, I've got to talk to this guy. People say, Tim, why don't you talk to these guys? So after the whole thing had finished, he was the last person giving a short presentation. He came towards me. I put out my hand. He held it in a very cold way. He just looked at me, unblinking, and he did not say a word. I just said to him, I think you have a great deal of knowledge. Thank you for your presentation and everything. It was absolutely not a flicker. And then he walked away. I think I gave him my business card, but I've certainly not heard from him. But the extraordinary thing is that I then met with my colleagues who were going home. None of us had had drinks at that point. We certainly had them when we got back to where I was being put up in a converted castle. But everybody said, gosh, that was interesting, you know. And I said, well, who is that guy? And he said, oh, he's often here. He's always got something very interesting to say. And I said, yes, what did he actually discuss? And they said, oh, it was about Earth's future in space. I said, yes, but what did he say? Nobody in that room, well, maybe some, but nobody that I was aware of could remember what he had said. And I certainly hadn't a clue. It's gone. So I just wonder whether that was something that was projected into the minds of the audience subliminally. I do not know, but it was slightly disturbing, I have to say. And the interesting thing is that the speaker, the guest of honor, is by contract supposed to get an audio tape of the entire proceedings, supposed to get photographs because there were photographers there.
Yes.
You're supposed to get this and that. I couldn't get a reply from anybody or even Professor Dudek, who had invited me. Nobody. I couldn't get any kind of response whatsoever. So that's really just about the end of the story.
Yeah, okay. Timothy, I'm going to join, you know, with the crowd that says, oh, come on, Timothy, why didn't you take the opportunity to speak to them? Why didn't you?
I did. I spoke to him. I said, I think you have a great deal of knowledge.
Right.
But I could see he wasn't going to say a word. So, you know, I stayed stumm.
Right. But, I mean, there could conceivably be so much more you could ask and so many more tests you could run. I mean, if you successfully have a guy and you mentally project this to touch his nose, well, all right, a million questions. For example, Timothy, aren't you concerned that you really did not connect with somebody from somewhere else, but you do have a talent for projecting suggestions to people, through telepathy? And so that doesn't necessarily mean they're from elsewhere, or when you said if there's anyone from elsewhere, please make yourself known now.
Yeah.
I mean... how do you know you're just not, I don't know, projecting telepathy?
Could be.
And how could you not test it further?
It could be, but
like,
there's just something about these guys that I've encountered about their sort of demeanor and the presence. There's just something different about these people for me.
Where are you from? How did you get here? Why are you here?
You're right, but this chap didn't say anything to me. I spoke to him very briefly, and I said, I think you have a great deal of knowledge. He said absolutely nothing.
No?
I could have spoken to the guy in New York, I'm quite sure, but I just didn't feel it was appropriate, and I just sat there, and I thought, well, you know, he might say something to me, but he didn't either. So there we are.
Okay, it is what it is. Hold tight. Going to take a quick break here. You can relax a little bit. Grab a cup of whatever it is you like, or a glass of whatever it is you like, and we'll come back and do more of this. It's Dark Matter. My guest is Timothy Good, all the way from London, England. And it's interesting. Asked him for the best documented case he ever ran into, and he gave me a personal case that I can identify with. Now, I know every time I see a really cute girl, I too have mental projections. But they've never resulted in even so much as a curtsy. Timothy, welcome back. So what you gave us, obviously, was a personal best, as it were. And you know what? I get it. If I had done that and people had responded that way, I would also regard that as incredible stuff. But when you tell it to other people, they're going to regard that as, you know, oh, come on.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've had a lot of that, right?
Well, let me tell you a little follow-up to that case from Poland 8 years ago, which I think it was in Wrocław. People say, Tim, why don't you get some pictures of these guys? Why don't you talk to them? Well, as you know, I tried to talk to the guy, and he didn't say a word. He just looked at me.
Right.
Unblinking eyes. But I did try and get a photograph in the break, because he was actually sitting in like about 10 feet away, 12 feet maybe at most away from me, among the audience. And I got my camera. I started doing a sort of panoramic shots. I needed to take three shots because of, you know, there were about 80 people there, and this was during an interval in fact, so there weren't that many people. So I thought, there's this guy sitting there, I'll get a shot of him. As I got to the area where he was sitting and just about to press the shutter, a voice boomed out and said, the speaker's not allowed to take pictures. And I looked around. That was a disembodied voice. There was nobody to be seen who actually said that to me. So I sort of looked blankly around and said, oh, I do apologize. So there you are.
So you're a contactee.
In a way, I suppose I am. Yes, certainly not a regular one. These things happen like every, you know, maybe decades go by and nothing happens. But I have had a few encounters of the close kind.
Apparently so. Now, if we move from that to the best documented case that didn't happen to you personally, where would we go?
Oh, my goodness me. There are so many, Art. I don't know. In many respects, it's a controversial choice, but I have to say, much as George Adamski has been maligned, in my new book, I'm trying to sort of improve his image, if you like, by pointing out that he was very serious-minded, he was very knowledgeable, that he actually had a United States government ordinance passed which gave him access to all military bases, not just throughout the United States, but throughout the world. Furthermore, he was consulted by Kennedy, I believe another president, though I'm not sure who it was. He was also treated with great respect at the Vatican. On several occasions, he had meetings with Pope John the 23rd, and another meeting, I think, with one of the Pope Pius. I forget the number after following his name, but he did have genuine encounters with aliens, of that I'm absolutely sure. And his photographs, I know quite a bit about photography. I have studied them very closely. All his photographs are genuine. The classic flying saucer ones from Flying Saucers Have Landed, which many people the first book for many people to read. And he took most of his photographs were taken through, in some cases, a powerful telescope, because he was an astronomer. He had a telescope in his,
yes,
in his where he lived in Palomar Terraces, and he got some great photographs. And the thing is that in my new book, a lot of the information relating to Adamski has been vindicated by other people. This is the so-called Amicizia case, which is extremely controversial. I've devoted one long chapter to the Amicizia case, and I return to it in a later chapter.
Perhaps you could describe it here.
Essentially, yes, certainly. This is something that went on for decades around the world, actually, meetings with aliens who collaborated with some of our scientists and people from all walks of life. It went on for a very long time. And were it not for the fact that I met one of the people who was involved for 40 years, I would have been extremely skeptical. But this was absolutely on the level. And the amount of information that has been passed, including technological information provided for me by Professor Stefano Breccia, who sadly died a couple of years ago. I got to know him, and my girlfriend and I visited him on two occasions in Italy, and we got a tremendous amount of information. He was a scientist. He'd lectured at the Russian Academy of Sciences and so on and so forth. And he had meetings with these people on a regular basis for nearly 40 years.
Well, all right. You said he had a great deal of specific technical information.
Yes.
Can you hit a few high points of that? I'm very interested.
Oh my goodness, you put me on the spot there. Well, I'll have to just have a look, because technologically, I don't understand a lot of it myself, I have to say, but there is certainly some information. If I can just flick through my book here, just to get some information.
Because anything technical is particularly fascinating to me, and many others,
exactly.
even if you don't get it.
Yeah. Let's just have a look here.
No hurry. Anything technical is just wonderful, and I would love to hear it.
No, I'm there now. Let's just have a look here. The type of what Stefano gave me. Let's talk about the Adamski craft. Stefano Breccia told me that much of what he learned attests to the validity of a number of Adamski's disputed claims and provides a great deal of new scientific and technical data. For example, he reports that the Adamski bell-type craft, the famous ones, which is about either, some people think it was about 27 feet, any measurements go up to 35 feet. Adamski's, the one with the three spheres underneath, the classic ones, are very similar to those produced by a race that these people in Italy, from all walks of life, were involved in, with the Amicizia people. There are actual diagrams of the craft showing similarities with some of these craft. And Stefano told me that he went with a German engineer in one of these craft on one occasion, which was being monitored at all times by the aliens from their own craft and from their other highly technological instruments, which they were.
You're saying he claimed to have actually gone on to the craft.
Stefano Breccia went on this craft, and which was flown by a German friend of his who had learnt it from these aliens, and they taught us how to fly some of these craft, and they have even given us some of these craft. I learnt, for example, that the Italian Air Force there were 10 pilots from the Italian Air Force who had flown these things. That was several years ago. I don't know what the situation is like today. But there's no question that a lot of this was very real.
That's a very strong statement to say there is no question that it was real when you're talking about aliens having given us craft
and apparently
trained us in how to...
That's correct, absolutely. In the United States, since the 1950s, I was told, we have been given craft, and even some of our astronauts have flown these craft. Gordon Cooper, who I knew, who was a supporter of mine, I had the great privilege of... I never actually met him, but we corresponded and spoke. But he told a friend of mine, who I trust implicitly, that he himself had flown some of these craft on quite a number of occasions, and that he was actually prepared back in 1978 to fly one of these craft and land it in front of the United Nations building in New York, if it ever came to people wanting proof.
That would be proof, all right. But I've interviewed Gordon, never a peep. Many years ago, I interviewed Gordon, and never a peep about that.
Right. Well, these guys keep their secrets, you know. But certainly, he told someone that I know, obviously, who I wouldn't name. He gave a lot of information away.
These are extraordinary claims. And what is it that causes you to believe these to be true?
I think, I never had face-to-face conversations with Gordon Cooper, but I just found him convincing the way he dealt with people, other people.
Yes.
I do. But there's certainly no proof. I can't prove it. But I'm sure that, as I say, I'm told that other astronauts have been flying these craft, but it's not something I'm in a position to prove. I wish I could.
I wish you could too. You know, it does kind of get to extraordinary claims and extraordinary evidence and all
yes.
of that. It's very interesting, but boy, oh boy, oh boy. And here's somebody writing to me. John, able to send me a message on the computer through mm-hmm. something we call the wormhole. He says, Roswell's aren't. I believe Timothy wrote in Above Top Secret that Neil Armstrong witnessed UFOs on the moon.
Yes.
Can you ask him about that? I wrote NASA, and they sent me a form letter of denial.
Well, let me tell you something. I had a friend, she's deceased now, a very good friend, called Pamela Hanford. I've been able to name her. I did allude to the case in Above Top Secret, but I've gone into much more detail in my new book. And I've named her Pamela Hanford. She'd served with Britain's Secret Intelligence Service, better known as MI6. And I once asked about her background in that clandestine organization. And she said, bearing in mind that I'm still firmly bound by the Official Secrets Act, all I can tell you is that I trained with the School of Military Intelligence in those days at Maresfield Park and did my parachute training with the London 21st. I was trained for the Russian front, learnt Russian, and came under MI6's umbrella. Because of the sensitivity of the field work, I can tell you nothing more. Now, she was invited to a classified conference by NASA. This conference was held at several venues in Italy in 1984, including the Europa Palace Hotel in Anacapri. Now, some of the astronauts were staying there, and Pamela actually overheard a conversation. She was probably taping it, I guess, now, looking back on it. But she had a conversation in the next room, because Neil Armstrong actually was in the bedroom next to hers, and Buzz Aldrin was in the one beyond that. But she had this conversation with a Professor Herbert Schwartz with Armstrong, and I think she recorded it. And this Professor Schwartz said, what really happened out there with Apollo 11? He was asking Armstrong. It was incredible. Of course, we'd always known there was a possibility. The fact is, we were warned off. There was never any question of our building a space station or a moon city. And then Professor Schwartz says, well, how do you mean warned off?
That's what I would have asked.
Right, Armstrong. I can't go into details except to say that their ships were far superior to ours, both in size and technology. Boy, were they big and menacing. No, there is no question of a space station. So he claimed.
Oh, my God.
And then Schwartz says, but NASA had other missions after Apollo 11. Armstrong said, naturally, NASA was committed at that time and couldn't risk a panic on Earth, but it really was a quick trip and back again. Now, later that day, Pamela confronted Armstrong, who confirmed that the story was true but refused to go into any further detail beyond admitting that the Central Intelligence Agency was behind the cover-up. But officially, of course, he denied everything. There were no objects reported found or seen on Apollo 11 or any other Apollo flight other than of natural origin, is what Armstrong told me.
Well, I will say this, Timothy. I have interviewed quite a large number of astronauts, and their interviews are always riveting, and they're always puzzling. In one case, I spoke to an astronaut who could not remember what it was like to be on the moon. And
good Lord.
I found that to be really puzzling. Yes, good Lord is a way to put it. But he was being absolutely honest, and he said, you know, Edgar Mitchell,
yes.
You know, please give me a sense of how it felt, how your emotions were, what it felt like beneath your feet, what you were thinking about as you looked at the landscape, as you looked at the stars and realized you were standing on the moon. He said, Art, it's really strange. I can't give you that. I can't give you that. And, you know, Timothy,
he had a sort of awakening.
That's just beyond all reason. How could you? It would be the high point of certainly an astronaut's life to walk on the moon. I guess you could be in some sort of state of shock, perhaps. But, gosh. You would be making, or I would be making, I can only relate it to myself, really hard mental notes about everything I saw, touched, felt, experienced. I would lock that in my memory for all time.
Yeah. Sure.
So, to hear that Armstrong, to hear that Armstrong, who was a very quiet guy. I mean, he said so little in public all these years, actually said that they were warned off the moon by gigantic craft.
Yep. That's what he told my friend Pamela anyway. And Pamela also told me that the United States was in contact with a certain planet. She didn't give me what planet or anything, but they were having regular communications and meetings and so forth.
God. You mentioned that somebody saw the Pope.
That's George Adams. On several occasions.
Yes. My question, Timothy, is, did he have a conversation with the Pope about this subject? And if so, what did the Pope say? Do you know offhand?
Well, I can describe, there was one meeting he had, a private audience at the Vatican with the then ailing Pope John the 23rd.
Uh-huh.
That was in 1963. To deliver an important package, he said that he had been given to him by one of his alien contacts, and this was to be delivered to Pope John the 23rd. When he came out, this is what my friend Lou Zinstag, who accompanied him, of course she wasn't allowed into the Vatican, but she was with another friend, and she said that when George came out, he was grinning like a monkey. He said, I was received by the Pope, he gave me his blessing, and I gave him the message. He told my friend that the Pope was not lying in the room above St. Peter's Square, as the people had been told, but that his bedroom faced the most beautiful part of the Vatican garden.
Mm-hmm.
And Adamski thought, if you ask me, the Pope is hardly a dying man. They haven't yet tried to operate on him, but I'm sure that's what they will do soon. Anyway, poor Pope John died a few days later. But
do you know the nature of the message that he delivered?
No, Adamski never gave that away. And what the Pope said was, "My son, this is what I have been waiting for." And then he spoke privately in a very low and soft voice for a few minutes to Adamski. I think his last words to Adamski were, "My son, don't worry, we will make it." And then Adamski was ushered out. And
wow.
Pope John died 2 days later, apparently.
Oh, what a story. Okay, you're just sort of blowing me away here with all kinds of things that I had not heard previously. And don't we wish we knew the nature of that message?
Yes, indeed. I think that the Vatican has a very good intelligence service, and I think they're very well informed about this subject.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think one can say the same for the Church of England, the Protestant Church of England over in the United Kingdom. I don't think there's very little interest.
Timothy, there have been some, I believe, bishops who have made some amazing statements in recent years.
Yes.
from the Vatican, right?
Yes.
Do you know the nature of them?
Well, for example, in 2008, Pope Benedict Benedict let it be known that there is no conflict between believing in God and in the possibility of extraterrestrial brothers, perhaps more evolved than humans.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in an interview with the Vatican's official newspaper, Father Jose Funes, a Jesuit then in charge of the Vatican's observatory, who's an expert on galaxies, said, "Astronomers believe that the universe is formed of hundreds of millions of galaxies, and in these are hundreds of millions of stars. Many of these, or all of them, could contain planets. So how can we exclude that developed life cannot be elsewhere? It's possible to believe in God and extraterrestrials without bringing into question our own faith." So I think that, you know, that's quite interesting.
It is. I know the Vatican has a number of telescopes, Timothy.
Yes, out in Arizona, I think.
For one, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it's a reasonable question to ask what the Vatican's expectation is that drove them to build such a large telescope.
Well,
what are they looking for, in other words?
I don't know. I assume that there's a genuine interest in astronomy and what the heavens contain. There always has been, I believe, certainly tremendous interest in the Vatican. But beyond that, I don't know. But I think there's a lot of knowledge in the Vatican, which is not the case, certainly in my country.
Well, I guess I'm wondering if they have knowledge of something they should be looking for.
I don't know. I can't help you with that.
All right. Well, I don't know is a fine answer if you really don't know. Timothy Good is my guest. And I guess we're talking about alien contact, eh? Just as Timothy Good with some amazing stuff. Absolutely amazing. And here he is once again. Timothy, you're back on the air again. And there are many doubters out there with regard to what you're saying, you can imagine.
Good.
I did get this, though, from Raymond. The Apollo 11 crew did see and admit publicly to seeing an unknown object on their flight to the moon. Apollo 12 encountered it as well, and they took a picture that was released to the public. I met Neil Armstrong,
yeah,
and he said it was an unknown, not alien.
Fair enough.
Okay.
I know Buzz Aldrin thought it was certainly very unknown. he's written about that.
Okay. It may be your approach, Timothy, but here's another one. This is from Lone Voice, whoever that is. Good evening. Our Timothy Good is making me sad. He sounds unwell. As for his appearance tonight, I began with an open mind. Now, it seems he has nothing but hearsay that he trusts implicitly. Therefore, it must be true. Sad. So, with what you've said, I do personally understand, Timothy, that if you had experienced the things you did personally, to you they would be as true can be, and you've done nothing but pass it along, and that's fine. But some of these other things about, you know, craft being given to us and being flown by astronauts and so forth and so on, I guess people are disappointed at the claims and then not so much to support them.
Well, I certainly can't prove. I certainly can't prove it. But I've just been informed by reliable sources. As I mentioned, a friend of a very close friend of Gordon Cooper told me that he, Cooper, had himself flown the craft, and that many of his colleagues had flown these craft. I can't prove that. And as far as Lynn's voice is concerned, I'm very well. Thank you very much. It's a little early in the morning here.
I guess you're about 8 hours ahead of us, right?
You in D.C.? You in D.C.?
No, heavens. Heavens, no.
Where are you?
My board operator is in... my board operator is in D.C. I'm in the state of Nevada near Las Vegas.
Oh, my goodness me. You're about 8 hours away. Yeah, I would say.
Yes, about eight hours. Mm-hmm.
Great. Area 51, Nevada.
Actually, it's just over the hill from me, Timothy.
Good.
Literally. Over the hill. I can look at the hill that divides myself from Area 51.
Uh-huh.
And when I take the back way to go to Las Vegas, I can pass very near it. So, or I can drive right to the mailbox. I mean, I'm that close.
Oh, yeah.
I'm as close as anybody you'll talk to. Okay, let's attempt a gear shift here. If I ask you for the best documented case that you know of that doesn't cite third parties and doesn't involve personal experience, then where would you go? And now I'm talking about quality of photographs and or artifacts or something that is verifiable. Or do we never get there? Is there nothing that you would personally consider to be, and I'm not asking here for absolute ironclad evidence, just, you know, what you consider to be the best in terms of backup, you know, pictures and or, I know many adult stories.
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, I've known people who've had close encounters with landed craft and so forth, but they didn't get any pictures of them or anything. So it's frustrating in that respect. But certainly, Adamski has had plenty of photographic evidence and film evidence.
Yes.
For example, one which is sometimes overlooked, but I have written about it in my books before. But in there's a description of the visit in 1965 of a craft to where my friend Madeline Rodefer was staying at the time that Adamski just, you know, it was like a few weeks before he died. She was looking after him,
right.
And she filmed a craft in full view of my friend Madeline, a craft that came right over the front lawn, the front yard of their house in Silver Spring, Maryland. And it was there for quite some time, and terrific movie film was taken, and I've reproduced clips in my books of that and everything. And the craft was about 27 feet in diameter, according to a scientist who evaluated the films and took George Adamski with the film to the Eastman Kodak Company in Rochester, New York State. And they were almost impressed by the film. I've got copies of the film. I've reproduced pictures of the craft showing how the propulsion system produces a distortion process around it, and I find mm-hmm. that very convincing. Now, let me tell you that eventually the craft went away, of course, and the film was evaluated by an optical physicist called Bill Sherwood. And as I say, Adamski was taken up with the film to Rochester, where these scientists were most impressed by it. But in 1998, I was invited to the Pentagon, the Defense Airborne Reconnaissance Office, which you cited in my introduction. And it was only a half-hour visit, and I expected a one-to-one with the general in charge of the Defense Airborne Reconnaissance Office, General Kenneth Israel. And when I got there, there were about, I guess, 25 people in the room. Nearly all of them were young people from various services. Some of them didn't look more than 17, 18, from Army, Navy, Air Force. And they were all very attentive. And I thought, well, goodness me, you know, I'm not here to give a presentation. But I was asked to by General Israel. And he'd first of all shown me, he said, Timothy, this is what I do. And he showed me pictures of drones flying here, there, and everywhere, and because that's the Defense Airborne Reconnaissance Office, which handles the unmanned spy planes.
Right.
And he says, now you tell us what you do. And so I talked about that film. I said, well, you know, there's a case downtown, outside of Washington, downtown in Silver Spring, Maryland. And he said, Timothy, he didn't say this to everybody, but he said to me, sort of privately, he said, I think you'll find that that film is absolutely genuine.
All right. You said the Adamski case was
certainly one of the best. Certainly one of the best in terms of...
One of the best, but you also said controversial, right?
Of course.
And,
I mean,
what,
you know,
and what is controversial about it? You've given me some pretty good stuff here about the film. In other words,
well, he claimed, for example, to have met Venusians and Martians and stuff like that. But I think he was certainly very sincere, and I knew a lot of people who knew him well, and since I myself had encounters with people similar to those he described, who were obviously highly telepathic, it kind of reinforces my belief, if you like. Belief's not the best word to use, but that is the case. I certainly can't prove it.
No, I understand. But even you should be given pause when he claims to have met with Martians. Now, We're pretty familiar with the current state of Mars.
Well,
yes, go ahead.
Yes, but we not everything is revealed. I mean, it's quite possible that there are bases on Mars which are used not just by aliens but by our own people. You know, I don't know how aware you are of the activities of U.S. Air Force Space Command. But there's a lot of information that they have had their own shuttle fleet for decades operating from an island in the Pacific Ocean. And there's a lot
I've heard this. I've actually heard this, that we have a complete secret space program.
Yes, and this information came to me from Paul LaViolette, an excellent excellent book.
Yes,
I forgot the title of it, but I cited it in my book, and I met the guy, and he's very, very convincing. And he says that, you know, there have been regular shuttle flights by U.S. Air Force Space Command to Mars. So, you know, not everything we're told is true. I believe Paul LaViolette and the information that he's acquired over years.
Oh, okay. So you believe that we have bases on Mars. What about the moon?
Same. Yeah, okay.
We have bases
on
the moon as well.
Sure.
If we did have such a thing, and if we had a secret space fleet, and I've considered this because I've been told this by many, including, by the way, Richard C. Hoagland. Mm-hmm. I think he has that belief. And I would ask a lot of, I guess, impertinent questions like, well, we've got a lot of amateur astronomers. Surely they would have noticed craft on the way to the moon and Mars and such coming and going. That would be something somebody would catch.
Well, Adamski certainly did. He was the first to catch them since, you know, like 1949. He started taking film through his telescope, and some of his photographs are absolutely superb, showing some of the giant mother craft, and as well as some of the smaller craft.
Mm-hmm. You said his film was examined by who?
Eastman Kodak in Rochester.
Eastman Kodak, and that really was back when we had film. So,
yeah, old 8mm film.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what the film was taken on.
Okay, fine. The Eastman Kodak, I'm presuming they made some sort of report, attesting to the validity of the photographs?
Well, if they did, I'm not aware of it, but certainly I know that a lot of investigations were made at the time. As to a report from Eastman Kodak that's been published, I'm not aware of it. I would have heard about it, I'm sure.
All right. I'm sure you would have, yes.
Maybe they consider it too sensitive or too embarrassing to talk. I mean, I don't know.
Right.
I could file a Freedom of Information Act request, I suppose, mm-hmm. which I last did with NASA a couple of years ago, which was quite amusing. Under the Freedom of Information, I asked about that classified conference that took place in Italy, which I referenced a while back. If you remember, my friend Pamela Hanford was there, and there's Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and German Professor Schwarz, lots of other people. It was a classified conference. I filed a Freedom of Information for a request to NASA, and they said no such conference took place. And, you know, a friend of mine gave a presentation there, so that's nonsense. So clearly they're lying about stuff. And then, quite casually, my partner, my girlfriend, just Googled the conference, and there's some details of it actually online. So it's actually nonsense. It's just ridiculous filing a Freedom of Information Act to find out that they say it never happened. It didn't take place, but there is strong evidence that it certainly did.
Well, I guess you've got to try.
Yeah.
Now, you're also claiming a big technological transfer from alien beings to human beings.
Absolutely.
That they have given us a great deal of technical information.
No question about it.
Do you know of what sort?
Well, I can give you one example. There's a guy called Carl Anderson who, there's a chapter, I think it's chapter 7, in 1954, he was with his family and relatives who they witnessed the landing of a disc-shaped craft on two occasions in the Mojave Desert. And several of the witnesses signed sworn affidavits testifying to these events, and I've reproduced one of those. And a few years later, Carl Anderson claimed to have been taken up in a craft and given instructions relating to alien propulsion technology, which he was asked to pass on to some distinguished scientists. For example, Professor Hermann Oberth, who I met in person, by the way. I went to his home. And Dr. Werner von Braun. Thus began a transfer of alien technology to our Earth scientists. So that has been going on for a very long time, and we have the technology, and many U.S. Air Force pilots have been flying these things since the 1950s. These craft have been given us. Now, you might ask, why on earth would they give us such advanced technology? The reason is simple. Earth is absolutely of prime importance in this neck of the woods, obviously not in the galaxy. It's certainly not unique in the galaxy, but in this neck of the woods, it's unique, and others have vested interests in.
Can you tell me why?
Of this planet.
Can you tell me why? we are that important?
Because they say it's unique in this neck of the woods, and they have a vested interest in it. And furthermore, there is a serious threat from other races to this planet. There is a conflict situation which has been going on maybe for thousands of years. I don't know. But some aliens have been based here for millennia, in my opinion. And they say that there is a threat to Earth, and that it is the greatest threat is posed by some races who want to take over. And I've gone into a lot of detail about that. We're talking about the guys who, the critters mostly, I'm told, who are involved in the so-called abductions. And the purpose of the abductions is to create a hybridized race which will be more suitable to adapt to planet Earth. So there is a takeover bid, or was. I do not know what the situation is like now, but that is what I have learned. And it seems, you know, these things are likely after all. We plan to go to Mars. I said plan, you know, we're already there as the U.S. Air Force Space Command is alleged to be there. So there are...
Right. You said there was a conflict, essentially a conflict going on over us because of our special something. Now, do you know what races or beings are involved in this conflict and why?
Well, the beings that are involved are the so-called some of the bug-eyed beings. I mean, there are different varieties of these smaller critters, that's for sure. But I think it's what I've been told is that these creatures have or had a long-term plan to create a race of alien human hybrids, purportedly to make us more peaceful. Their true purpose, however, I have been told by a Washington source, is to create a passive human race incapable of violence by eradicating the human emotions that enable us to survive, thus laying us open to conquest. Now, as I say, you know, if this has been a long-term stratagem, I've yet to see much evidence of the human race becoming less violent.
I was about to suggest exactly the same thing, and I have only to read tonight's news here in the U.S. to absolutely confirm that fact. If that's what they're trying to do, it's not working.
No, well, I hope not. But I'm told that a number of their bases were guarded or are guarded by elements of the United States military. And that a select cell within the Army worked with other security cells in Air Force and Navy. And around 100 personnel from the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, AFOSI, were involved.
You just said we are guarding their bases here, yes?
Some of the aliens are guarding our bases, that's for sure, yes.
Oh, guarding our bases? They're guarding our bases. Wait a minute. Let's get this straight. If you don't mind, hold on a sec. Let's get this straight. Who's guarding whose bases?
I've been told that some of our own military are guarding alien bases to a certain extent, and I don't know if that was going on years ago. I do not know if that is still happening. I have no idea what's going on right now.
Did anybody ever mention where any of these bases were located?
No.
I see.
But as I say, this was part of what was called Project Aquarius, allegedly, and a number of these bases were guarded by elements of the U.S. military from Project Aquarius. Also, Air Force Office of Special Investigations were involved. Well, they deal more or less full time with the UFO situation, as you probably know. Mm-hmm. And when I had that meeting at the Defense Airborne Reconnaissance Office with General Israel, he confirmed for me that AFOSI was involved in investigations, since the phenomenon seemed to him to be more of a policing problem rather than one affecting national security, which is an interesting comment.
Yes, it is. Adamski referred to one craft 3,000 feet in length. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so. There are these alleged huge motherships, absolutely huge.
One would think that they would be absolutely spotted and photographed. I mean, they're so big that if they were actually hovering within Earth's envelope atmosphere, they would be really photographed a lot.
Well, there are quite a number of photographs, not taken not just by Adamski, but of others, of these close-ups of some of these huge craft, which there are photographs which are available.
But everybody always asks why they show up in all of these remote places and don't fly over major cities in the world, London, New York, LA.
Well, the thing is, they do, but it's rare, I have to say. For example, in 1955, in a suburb of London, this was in July 1955, there was a heat wave at the time, two flying saucers landed in Bexley Heath, a suburb of London, and a friend of mine was one of the witnesses, Margaret Fry. She's still alive to this day, very good UFO researcher. And she saw this thing. She was traveling with her doctor to take one of her sons to the hospital, and to the doctor's surgery. And suddenly the car engine conked out, and the car drew to a halt, and this craft landed like about 20 feet away from them. And it was about 30 feet in diameter. Nobody got out of it. And I reproduced a sketch done by Margaret Fry of that craft. And a few days earlier, in another part of that town, which is part of the greater London area, another craft landed, slightly different shape, and there were over 100 witnesses. And the Ministry of Defence tried to confiscate all sorts of information from people about it and asked people not to talk about it. It was in the interest of national security to talk about it, and so it was dampened down for years until Margaret and some other people came forward. And I've spoken to several of the witnesses, and I'm convinced it's very, very credible. And these things have landed in other countries, many other countries as well.
Timothy, somebody who names himself Cardio Panic, interesting name, apparently wants to test his heart and is asking you where we can see film or pictures that you were talking about, Adamski pictures. Surely they're on the web somewhere from Canada.
Well, I've got a few in my new book, including one that's very seldom reproduced, which is a close-up through a telescope Adamski took of one of these bell-shaped craft. And often that picture isn't fully reproduced. I have reproduced the entire picture, which gives a better perspective of the whole thing. So that's in the new book. But other pictures I've published of quite a lot of the Adamski pictures in previous books, like Beyond Top Secret, Above Top Secret, and some other books.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What we're going to do here is take a brief pause and pick up on this. You might consider whether there's anywhere on the web that we can find these things. Just take a quick look. I'm sure the Adamski photographs are there somewhere. From the high desert and the great American Southwest, this is Dark Matter. All right. Timothy Good is my guest. And here's a question that comes in for you, Timothy, from Rich of Pennsylvania. He says, incredibly speculative. Instead of only referencing evidence of others, some pictures or actual evidence would be great. We are unique, and there is a conflict over us, but why and who? So let me reference the first. The Adamski pictures, are they available on the web as well, do you know?
You know, I've never looked, Art.
I see.
I've never looked at, because I've got them all, including some original prints. So, yeah.
Right. Well, listen, it has been quite an evening, and I want to thank you for being on. We're going to cut it a little short here. But again, I want to thank you for being on and joining us tonight.
It's my pleasure, Art. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care, and I hope the weather treats you well in London. Once again, thank you for being on the program. And that's kind of where I'm going to hold it right now. And what we're going to do is open lines. So, back there in D.C., Evan, open the lines right now. That's, by the way, the name of my board op in Washington, D.C. His name is Evan. And now Evan is going to answer the phone and probably ask you your name and where you're calling from, but that's all. And I would like to specify the reason we're doing that is because that will avoid the painful, is it me, question. I do understand that when you get on the air, it is difficult to know that you're the one. We have many, many lines attached to all but one number. And that number, by the way, is 855-REAL-UFO. 855-REAL-UFO on your phone. Or 855-732-5836. We are going to do unscreened calls. Now, you might say, well, that is screening. Only so that we can avoid that. They're not going to toss you for one reason or any reason. They're simply going to ask you your name and perhaps where you're located. And after that is done, you're going to be on with whatever you want to talk about. So you're not going to get rejected for any reason. I want to specify it is open lines. And I would be interested in your reaction to Timothy Good, among other things. There are a very great deal we can talk about tonight, but I'm going to ask your reaction to Timothy. And mine was, you know what? I'm not going to give you my reaction. How about that? I'm going to allow you to state your reaction, and eventually, I'm sure you'll, if you don't already know what it is, you'll get mine. How can I put this? You know what? I'm not going to put it at all. I'm simply going to allow you to react to what you heard, and we'll go from there. How's that? Let us begin in New York with Pete. You're on the air, Pete. Hi.
Hi, Art. Am I getting any noise on my signal tonight?
A little bit, but it's not bad. I'll put up with it.
If I take it off speaker, let me take it off speakerphone.
Everybody, never, ever call on a speakerphone. Never, never, never.
I did that the other night. I should have been on my transmitter and talked to me on AM. I probably would have done a lot better. Uh-huh. But anyways, very interesting with the, you know, with the call or your guest tonight, and I'm going to kind of not really go off subject, but in regards to UFOs and such, there's an area in New York up in the on the Tug Hill area called Happy Valley. Are you familiar with that at all?
I'm not.
Okay, because there's been a lot, I guess, some activity up there with UFOs. There's been people up there recording different things, and there's been, like, ghostly activity up there that they really claim is, happening there.
Are you talking about something that's current happening now?
Well, if you Google it, over the past, several years, there's been different issues, or not issues, but, sightings and claims that have been going on up there.
Okay. Are there any photographs to go with the claims?
Is there any sort of what?
Are there any photographs to go with the claims?
There's some video in there that like YouTube videos and stuff that people have recorded, but I personally didn't see a lot in there, but they make it sound like it's, like, well-known.
All right. When I said, is it contemporary, I meant, the last several weeks, several months. What are we talking about?
I'm speaking probably within the last maybe 10 years, within 10 years.
Okay. So last decade. Would imagine in that span of time, if there was a great deal of activity, that there would have been some photographs to go with.
Yeah, right.
We live in such a different age now, mm-hmm. and I guess the age we live in demands proof beyond, a friend told me.
Exactly,
kind of
exactly. Yeah, I do understand that. I really try to, investigate as much as I can, but you can, as far as what I can find on that, it's the only thing I'm finding are, internet sources and
right.
You know how that works.
Right. I do. I do indeed. All right. Well, listen, thank you very much. The last thing in the world that I wanted to be was rude to Timothy Good, because he's got, in ufology, quite a reputation. But we do live in a different age now, right? An age where some level of first person is required for extraordinary claims. And if not first person, then some evidence to go along with. And now the Adamski story, for example, I know there are a lot of older photographs associated with it. And the fact that Kodak examined them certainly is interesting. But again, we ran into a situation where the only evidence we had was somebody's word that they had heard that Kodak had looked at them, that sort of thing. So there you have it. Utah brings Mike. Mike, welcome to Open Lines.
Mega Roswell, Zart.
Thank you.
And might I say, you're the cure, you're the anecdote for five-hour energy for us drivers out here on the highway. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
I just want to tell you, I've seen a UFO with my own eyes, too, Art, and it's changed my life the whole time. I was a young man when I seen it, but I've never, ever forgot it. But when we first saw it, we thought it was a piece of newspaper that flew out of somebody's chimney flying around from the distance. We was coming back from dinner up there in Sandy, Utah, and we stood out there and watched it for 10 minutes. And you wanted to think it was a balloon or something like that, but it made no sound other than a whooshing sound, like blowing air. And there was flame underneath it and the whole bit, just like hovering. We thought it was a hot air balloon got away from somebody. But anyway, as we was watching it, my dad went in to get a camera, and he come back out. And as soon as he hit the door, that thing took off across the sky towards what we call the point of the mountain where the prison is, and it was gone like in a split second.
I understand. That's something. Now, did it? You described it at one point as maybe a newspaper floating.
We was like several miles away. We thought somebody back then they had the fireplaces, you know, that you still burn in the wall. And
I understand. No, what I'm asking is, did it get any closer to you than that?
No, it just hovered above, right above our subdivision there, right above our street, basically. And so when I was a young man, too, we also saw a balloon that got away from a road show or something they was doing. You know, one of them that they give you rides in it, you know, with a rope, and it broke loose. And that's what it reminded me of. And there was people in it when that broke loose, and it finally crash-landed somewhere several miles away. But when we saw it, we thought that's what it was. Your mind kept wanting to tell you it was a helicopter, something like that. But as it turned out, it was supersonic. I mean, it took off and it was gone, just hovering above the subdivision.
Yep, that's the kind of thing, thank you very much, that will convince you. Newspapers don't take off supersonically. And there is a division now in the world, and it's between those who have seen personally these things and those who have not. And I do truly understand the doubt of those who have not seen. There's nothing like seeing with your own eyes. It changes you, and you will always remain thusly changed. But if you haven't seen it, and you're only hearing descriptions, or worse yet, my best friend talked to somebody who saw, you know, it's not enough. It's not convincing in any way. And maybe it is that we live now in a different, more modern age. I don't know. Let's go to California and Gordon, I believe it is. Gordon?
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
Glad to have reached you. I got a couple of things. One is something that I saw personally, and this was 30 years ago when I was a kid, but what looked like a meteor streaking across the sky, and I thought, wow, that's really cool, and then all of a sudden it made a right angle. I said, okay, meteors do not do that.
Yes.
But, you know, it was so far away, it was just like a streak of light. But I have an opinion that I would like to throw out there. You hear a lot of people saying, okay, if we do have aliens coming here, why? Why would they come to this little blue dot in the middle of the galaxy?
You know, that's really what I wanted to ask Timothy, but he didn't have an answer for it. If they're fighting over us, if we are in some way special, I would really, really love to know what that is.
Yeah. I have an opinion. Have you ever read or heard of a book called the Urantia Book?
Yes.
Okay. Then, have you read it? Or are you familiar with it?
I am, yes.
Okay. Could it be possible that they're coming here because of what they call the world of Cross?
Oh, you want to explain that?
Okay, according to the Urantia, who we call Jesus Christ, the Urantia book calls Christ Michael, is the star for our local universe. And he served his last sojourn, his seventh sojourn, to be Christ.
Okay, we're starting to lose you.
Okay. He's the sovereign, supposedly, of our universe. Yet he served, he became a human to experience being human on Earth. Mm-hmm. And these other worlds apparently are aware of that. And could they be coming here because we are what they call the world of the cross, where Christ died?
All right, I can't deny that any of that could be. I have talked to people, for example, like John Lear. And John gets pretty far out there. In his description of human beings as containers, and that the fight is over our collective souls. And he, John, told quite a reasonable story. I mean, out there, but in terms of believability, he actually came forth with an explanation that it is a fight over our souls, and one might imagine that to be true. What do you think? That's the special something about us. Oklahoma brings Stu. Hello, Stu.
Yes, sir. I was calling about, is this Mr. Bell?
That would be me.
Oh, sevens and threes to you, Manny Roswell. I've got a question about, if we'll ever get to hear a guest talk about, like, number stations on shortwave.
Have you seen the movie?
No, I have not. I that's what I was kind of prefacing it to, because I hear there's a new movie coming out.
Oh, it's already out. It's called The Numbers. Yes, it's called The Numbers Station. It's actually quite good. I watched it, I think, a couple of weeks ago. And it's very well done. Are you familiar with numbers stations?
Yes, sir. Well, as far as UVB-76 and the others out of China, but not any stateside ones, no, sir.
Well, okay. There are, on shortwave, folks, for real, number stations. I should have recorded one of them, and I will record one of them. You will encounter them on virtually any frequency on the shortwave band. And when you do, you will hear something. You will hear a young lady normally simply sitting there reading something like this: 9, 17, 24, 99, 97. And it just goes on and on and on. And it is a popular belief that these are spy stations, that these codes are given out to bring specific instructions to agents around the world in foreign countries. And that's, of course, the premise of the movie called The Number Stations. It's kind of interesting. It's frankly, when I watched the movie, my expectations were not very high, and they were exceeded. It was quite good. It's a good drama. And in real life, number stations are quite interesting. Let's go to Georgia and Chris.
Regarding what the previous caller was talking about, maybe why aliens visit us, maybe they know that we're as unique as they are. Maybe it's just us and them.
I think if there is anything unique about us, it's going to be our souls. And that's where I kind of agree with John Lear. I mean, otherwise, we're interesting. We're an evolved life form, at least to some degree, right? Some more than others, I would add. But if there's a reason to be interested in us, it's got to be something more than we understand presently, I would think.
Right. Well, listen, it's a pleasure to talk to you. And it was only a couple of years ago when I said to myself, I wish I had a chance to talk to Art Bell. And now I get that chance again. But anyway, I'm in my mid-40s, and I wanted to tell you about something that happened to me when I was younger. And it was real profound. It may not sound profound with my explanation, but it was, you know, a pretty big deal looking back on it. But when I was a teenager, I worked at a local Dairy Queen in a small town, and I was a new kid in town. And after work at night, you know, the other kids, they just wanted to take me out and show me around. And they took me up to this mountain. It was kind of in the country and in the hills. So we went up to, they were country folk, and we went up into this mountain, and they said, oh, there's this cave up there. It's a haunted cave. So some other kids from work, it was some guys and some girls. We go up into that cave into the mountain, and there's this one particular girl that I was, you know, playing around with and teasing at work all the time. And yeah, she was with the group. And when we were walking into the cave, there was this little nook or like a, you know, place where I could kind of dip into like this hole and crevice and hide. And I figured, well, on our way out, I'm going to dip into this crevice, hide, and I'm going to scare this girl coming out. Mm. And so I get into this crevice, and I'm about to jump out and scare this girl. And I was so excited, I couldn't contain myself. But just as I'm about to jump out, I feel this hand come up onto my chest and physically push me back up against the wall of that cave.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of went into this sort of hard to breathe, kind of like a trance-like state,
mm-hmm.
but I couldn't do anything. And it was literally like a physical hand pushing me up against the wall. So the kids milled by, and
Were you still plastered up against the wall as the girl came by?
Well, yeah, I was. And, you know, and what happened was just such a shock to me. I really kind of just forgot about what was going on. And they milled by, and, you know, I came out of it, and the feeling went away, and I followed everybody else out of the cave. And we get out of the cave, and everybody was going, oh, that was pretty cool. And the girl's naturally going, well, I was so scared. That was creepy. Well, the girl that I was going to jump out and grab, she jumps up and says, well, I wasn't scared of anything. I was ready for it. And she was holding a .38 caliber revolver.
Oh?
In her hand.
Oh.
And I'm just wondering, you know, what was that? I mean, it wasn't like an intuition or an instinct, because I was about to leap out and grab that girl. That was my full intention, was to jump out, grab her, scare her, and get a big laugh. But
so in other words, an iron hand saved your butt.
You could say that, but it was very profound, and I'm just wondering if anybody has ever experienced anything like that before.
Well, that's a hell of a story. I'll give you that. Pretty cool, actually.
Well, see, the thing is, Art, it happened one more time about 5 or 6 years later at a red light, where the red light turned green. I'm the lead car in the intersection, and that unseen hand is back on my chest, and I can't really think or breathe or concentrate or do anything for about 5 seconds. And when it goes away, the cars behind me honk their horn, and I proceed into the intersection just in time to stop as a truck runs the red light just where I would have been had that not had happened.
So you have a guardian hand in your life.
Well, I'm just wondering if that's ever happened to anybody else, because why would that happen to me? People get accidentally shot all the time. People get T-boned in intersections all the time.
Yes, they do.
I mean,
but you have been saved by the guardian hand. Now,
I don't know why, because there's nothing special about me, I'll tell you that. I'm just a single guy that lives with two dogs.
There is now. There is now. All right, well, that's one whale of a story. Saved by the hand. Way better than talk to the hand, right? Saved by the hand. Had his life saved twice by the hand. Anybody else out there experience anything like that? Actually, that's a pretty cool story. David in Oklahoma, you're on the air. Hi.
Roswell's Art.
Thank you.
Yeah, back in 1999, I lived in Mount Vernon, Indiana. It goes along, it's nothing but cornfields all the way from the, it's about 5 miles from Illinois state line, and if you followed I-64, it ends up at Scott's Air Force Base. Uh-huh. I've heard stories before that Scott's Air Force Base had UFOs. Well, back in 1999, me and my kids' mom just got home. It was about 9:30 at night, and I looked off toward the Wabash River toward Illinois, and here comes this light toward us. She goes on in, takes a shower. I get the kids out, take them into bed, come back out. I'm getting groceries out. And I just stopped because this thing is just coming so low. It flies completely over my head. It couldn't have been moving a half a mile an hour. It took like 3 minutes to cover, to get completely past me. And it was, and I had a yard light, out in front of my yard between the road and my front of my house. You probably got about 200 feet. Well, the thing completely covered from the road all the way to the front of my house wide, and it was probably a football field long. There was nothing, no sound, no crickets, no, I mean, you could hear the crickets, but there was no sound of this thing at all. It was totally amazing. And then about a few years later, well, it was back in 2006, I was up in Chicago, and I heard a guy describe it as an aircraft carrier was blocking the O'Hara Airport. And it was hovering above the O'Hara Airport, and this was on a local radio station in Chicago.
I kind of remember that.
Yes, and they described it the same way I'd always described it, as a floating city block, until I heard that guy describe it as a floating aircraft carrier, or mm-hmm. I would say like a floating barge on a river, and it was amazing. And I could, you know, it was, I could see the blue, I could see windows, I didn't see nobody. But, I mean, it was just, it wasn't very tall. It had to have little people in there because, you know, I could see that it was no wider than like a river barge, or the depth of it would be no deeper than a river barge. But it was
so
long.
How little would the people have to be?
I'm going to say you had to be 5 feet or smaller.
Right. It was okay,
and I've heard like Scott Air Force Base before from other people saying that's where they are doing these. You know, I believe that's where the UFO. Because you could leave Scott Air Force Base, and you could go straight to where the UFO flew over me, and I went. And as the thing is coming into the yard, I went and snatched my kids' mom out of the shower, brought her out on the porch, and I was like, because we lived out in the country, there was nobody around, and I brought her out on the porch. She looks up at it, and she, you know, her attitude was just mind-blowing. She's like, so what, it's a UFO. I'm like, oh, are you crazy? I said,
all right, thank you. That's too much. So what? It's a UFO. Big deal. I'm going back to the shower. That is funny. What is the... I think I've got a question for the audience. We'll see who's going to be willing. Oh, by the way, I have got Skype all ready to go. So I am going to qualify you all to call on Skype, and I'll play with it tonight. I've been wanting to play with Skype anyway, so it's a good night to play with it. Here's the way you contact me on Skype. Somehow I imagine this lady being dragged from the shower, probably no clothes or very almost no clothes. I'm art.bell51. That's the way you reach me on Skype. art.bell51. Now, I don't have video. People keep trying to connect with video, and I'm intentionally not hooking up the video. For one thing, it requires more bandwidth, so I'm not going to do that, but we're all set to receive audio, And if you're outside the United States, it absolutely is an opportunity for you to call in. I'm going to give the address one more time, and I hope you'll give it a try. I will absolutely answer it. Art.Bell51. That's the way to reach me on Skype. In the meantime, let's go. I just opened Skype up, so it's all set. Let's go to Texas and Ross. Hello, Ross.
Good evening, Art. Pleasure to speak to you. I used to listen to you back in 95 and 96 a lot. And one story I've never forgotten, and I tried to call in during the Time Traveler segment you had a few weeks ago. I couldn't get through, but we all just get through whenever we're supposed to. I've never forgotten about Jonathan or Single Seven, the rogue time traveler. Could you please tell me what happened to him? Because he went off the radio, and I never found out.
Listen, I don't know what happened to any of my time travelers. What I can tell you is this. Almost all of them disappeared and have been virtually impossible to contact. I've heard rumors that Dr. David Anderson, who was a pretty convincing guy at the time, is still around or may be around, and I've got somebody trying to contact him. But look, almost everybody who claimed to be a time traveler is gone. What that means, I'll let you imagine for yourself.
Oh, my. It was the best story ever. He had an answer for every one of your questions.
Oh, yeah.
Could have made a great movie. I don't know why no one made a movie out of it, but it was the best.
Well, there have been a lot of time traveler movies since.
Wow. He was just a rogue who separated from his pod and came back to keep the world warm so the Neem couldn't take over or something like that.
I think that this show, this program, has inspired a lot of movies that you've seen since those years when we did those shows. A lot of writers were sitting around listening to my show and ended up writing stories that ended up becoming movies.
We could have made a bundle. Anyway, one other question. Years ago when I was out here living alone on my property in Texas, I was camping out for many years, but somewhere in 95 or 96, I saw a shooting star hit the ground between me and the next town south of here. And I never went out there to see what happened. There was a friend of mine and his daughter out here. They were looking at the ground at the time, and they kind of saw remnants of the flash, and I told them about it. They doubted me until he went back to his town in Fredericksburg the next day and heard about it on the radio, because people from there had seen the flash from, 40 miles away. And
wow.
It was between me and the next town, which was 10 miles south of me, and I never did go out to look for a crater, and I recently went on Google Earth to see if there was a crater of some sort, but the next day there were helicopters around, and that metal is probably worth a lot of money if I would just go out there and look for it. I was too busy building my house, and I never did go just look for the crater or any such
thing. Well, if there were helicopters around, there probably were men in black and all kinds of things looking for what you wanted to find, and I'm sure they got it and you didn't. On Skype, hello, Frank, you're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah, I can.
No, you're all broken up, sir.
Sorry.
Might as well be from another planet. Not a good connection, but thank you for trying, Frank. Not a good connection. I'm sorry. I'm not sure whose side that was on, but we gave it a shot. Now, here's something important, folks, if you're able to do it. If you're going to try the Skype direction, please, if you're able to, number one, wear a headset mic, if you have one. That's ideal. If you don't have a headset mic, then what I would ask you to do is to get very close to the microphone on your speaker. I really, really, really want to experiment with Skype. I hope we get some good connections. Again, to call me, it's simply art.bell51. That's simple, and you'll get through. All right, let's go here, Arizona, and Derek.
Hi, I'm glad I made it through.
I'm glad you did, too.
There's been a lot of inspiring, kind of conversation about why we're important. And I'd like to preface this with saying that I come from a strong Christian upbringing and believe every word of the Bible. If it's if some people think it's a metaphor, sometimes the metaphor is just as important. However, we're talking about aliens making hybrids, and I don't think, you know, people when the Bible was written could relate to that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been able to find anybody in any church, at least Protestant church, that would be willing to correlate what we know or think we might know about aliens with the Bible. A lot of them kind of just like reject it, and I think it fits quite nicely. And as far as how we're important in this neck of the woods, you know, to quote Timothy, I think it has something about us being created in God's image. And I also like what he said about...
Let me ask you this, sir. Do you think that aliens, if they exist, are also created in the same image of the same God?
Not at all.
No?
That's why we're unique. No.
Oh, so God is unique. Excuse me. God is unique only to human beings and planet Earth.
Not. No. Let me. That is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is God's everywhere. He's omnipresent, and omniscient, and omnipotent. But
okay, if that's true, sir, then would he not be the God of another race as well?
He is, but those races aren't created in his image. For example, the angels, if you would like to prescribe the name angels to alien, I kind of see them synonymous.
You do?
I kind of do. And in that line of thinking, I don't think that they have emotions. I think they,
that's not consistent with the Bible, sir. I'm sorry. That's you're going way off track there. Either God is everywhere and everybody's God, or not. And angels equal aliens, or aliens equal angels? I don't think so. I mean, your whole premise began with "I believe every word in the Bible." So that just doesn't work. I'm going to try Skype again. Brendan, you're on the air on Skype. Hello.
Megan Roswell's art.
Well, thank you. You've got a good connection. Where are you?
Santa Barbara, California.
Santa Barbara. Excellent. Welcome to the program.
It's really good to have you back.
Thank you.
No, it's really, it's just, it's incredible. But tonight didn't go well.
No, it didn't.
You know, and I'd actually been so excited that I signed up for Sirius.
And let's, you know what? Let's examine, or you give me your opinion of what happened with Timothy Good.
I think he's a gentleman.
Absolutely.
I think that he might have been a little bit too gentlemanly, but I do think that, and this is going to be tough, Art.
That's
push
right.
Back here a little bit.
Okay.
I'm gonna
push away.
You're so important to me, but Art, I think you should have read the book.
I should have read the book. here's the thing. I read a lot, sir. Hold on just a second. I read a lot of my guest's book. In fact, my guest's book, excuse me. I got a signed copy of last night's guest. I didn't know that I had it until after the show. So I do it after I've had the guest on. And the reason is this. I don't want to get a guest on the air who just says, you know what, it's in my book. If I ask them a question, it's in my book. Is not a good enough answer for a talk show. When you're doing a talk show, you want actual information. And so even if they've written a book, you want them to be able to tell the audience about whatever the story is and not just sort of say, it's in my book.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the book, as far as, you know, I've read so far, does contain a lot of firsthand witness testimony. He goes and he interviews some people with some really excellent stories. But I don't know why he didn't talk about that. And I think maybe it's because, you know, he wasn't prompted to, or maybe he's just too sweet.
Sweet. Well,
anyway,
you can't fault me for not trying, sir. I tried to get him to go toward, you know, firsthand evidence. I tried to get him to go toward things, you know, but it was, it all came out sort of third handish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or read my book.
Well, thank you. Listen, and last thing, you know, I wanted to say that every, since we treated you as a family, every time my dad gets a nosebleed, he says, oh, it's the implant. So, you've played a large role in, you know, my family dynamic, and we appreciate all your work in that regard.
I appreciate your call. Thank you very much, and take care. So there you have it. And now we've got a zillion Skype calls there. They're just coming in by the boatload. So let's go here to Arizona and Bill. Hi, Bill.
Oh, hi, Art. Yeah, first time caller listener. I'm really I'm kind of concerned with your first story, the whole thing in Japan and Fukushima. Those people are volunteering to die that are going to be doing those rods, and we all need to really have our minds focused that they can all get it done. Otherwise, it's been great to listen to you, Art, if tomorrow doesn't go well.
First of all, understand, it's not tomorrow, although I always worry about tomorrow. But this is going to be going on for about a year. It's going to take them about a year to transfer these fuel rods safely, and it's all going to be a human operation. This is scary stuff.
Right, right. It's serious. But to go back to, I've been listening the past couple of weeks here to you since you've been on Sirius, and I've kind of been wondering if there's a planet that's out of phase that the interdimensional people come from that won the war where the debris is on Mars, and it isn't taking aliens from way far away. They're right here. They won the war millennia ago, and maybe we're remnants of those that they defeated, and they let us just kind of be until we finally recognize who they are and maybe pose them at that point, and so they keep tabs on us.
Well, I hate to think of myself as a remnant, but you never know.
Kind of weird thought. Just a postulation. Well, thank you, Art.
Thanks for the call, sir, from one remnant to another. Are we remnants, do you think? That there was a war over the human race long ago. That war was, one side was victorious, and now we are nothing but the remnants. Let's go back, if we can give it a try, to Skype and say, hi there, Zach, you're on the air.
Hi, Art, can you hear me?
Oh, I do indeed.
Oh, excellent. Thank you very much for having me, Mega Roswells and 51s from Belgab.
Thank you.
As a matter of curiosity, the Elisa Lam case that you talked about last week.
Uh-huh. Where are you?
Oh, I'm in Oakville. That's just outside of Toronto, Canada.
Okay. And the Elisa Lam case. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. I did some research after I watched the video, and I wanted to share with you one of the theories that's going around on the internet about it.
Sure.
Apparently, around the time that she was found dead, there was a tuberculosis outbreak amongst the homeless population in L.A.
Really?
And someone looked up her name and discovered that it was an anagram for the American classification for tuberculosis or something like that.
That's weird.
And that perhaps some sort of government or some sort of clandestine operation perhaps poisoned her, but I mean, I'm not a believer in this. It's just something that was interesting because I'm sort of skeptical. It still doesn't explain how she ended up where she did. You know, clothes weren't found.
No,
how she got through all these layers of security, the alarm systems, and so forth. Which brings another one where they were saying that perhaps she used, or not she, but whoever offed her, used some kind of cloaking technology. Apparently there's a Canadian company, oddly enough, that apparently has come up with it.
Huh.
And it's some sort of, she may have just been a victim of some sort of test operation.
Maybe. I have no idea. I'm with you all the way. I mean, look, she went through locked doors that were locked afterward. She went to a place that it's very unlikely she would go. She went through alarm systems that didn't go off. There's so much about the story that is just too weird.
Right. I mean, one thing also to consider is that the hotel was rather decrepit, and it's possible that some of the security measures could have failed at the time. That's another thing that comes to mind.
Possibly. I have no answers. None at all.
Neither do I. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I just thought I'd share some of the things that people are talking about. I mean, I personally don't think we'll ever get to the bottom of what happened to her.
I think you're right. We're never going to get to the bottom of it, but it stands out as one of the weirdest cases. And to this day, if I sit down again and I watch that video, it totally creeps me out.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah. I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. And take care. Totally creeps me out. There are, you know, and I've got another one, you know, ghost in a hallway and all that sort of thing. But there's something about that case and that video that is creepy, over the top creepy. All right, let's see where to go. Let's go here to Iowa. And Tom, you're on the air. Hi. Hello? Well, maybe I didn't punch the button. Let me try again. There we go. Tom, I think you're on the air now. Hello?
All right, how you doing?
Just fine, sir.
Good. Yeah, I've been trying to get through to you. Hey, I sent you a wormhole message about it. I thought praying mantises were aliens, and then all of a sudden, a couple days later, some lady came on the show. I remember that, and she said there was like 8-foot praying mantises.
I do recall, yes.
I thought that was kind of cool. But, yeah, I lived in, I was born in like Lake City, Minnesota, and one day I was walking home from town. It was like in the early 60s.
Yes.
And I remember this, but I don't know if it's true or not, but my neighbor block down the road was looking at something, and I asked her what she's looking at, and she pointed out this big flying saucer just hovering in the air north of town there. And like I said, you know, it was in the 60s. I still remember to this day seeing it up there. But I don't know what happened to it or anything, you know, how it disappeared or left, you know. But I've been trying to get a hold of you and find out, you know, have you heard of anything like that? Or
I've heard of nothing but things like that, sir. Not that particular one, but like them, sure. A million of them. In fact, we almost shouldn't tell these stories because they are that common. I saw a flying saucer. Well, yeah, me too. I saw a triangle. Me too. So they're not uncommon. They're extremely common. The question is how we flush out what they really are. In my opinion, it's just my opinion, they're not from here. Is there a possibility they could be, that we're doing something that secret? Yes. Now, to go to something that Timothy Good said, and maybe some of you want to reflect on this, I have a very difficult time, and I know Richard C., if he's out there, is going to be hearing this and going, oh, come on, Art. But I have a very, very hard time believing that we have a secret space program. Something so secret and so incredible that we're putting things on the moon, we have bases on the moon, we have bases on Mars and beyond. I truly don't believe that. I would like for it to be true, but I don't believe it. All right. On Skype, you're on the air from where I don't know. Hello. Sun Jim, is that correct?
Yes, it is, Art. Can you hear me?
Yes, and I can't pronounce your name, so help me.
You can call me SJ. I'm a West Coast fisherman. Oh. And I've got some great stories for you. I wanted to talk to you about the lighter side of aliens, and also about God.
Well, I'm glad aliens have a lighter side. Let's hear about that.
Well, for one thing, I've always suspected that a lot of the crop circles are done by alien kids that are on field trip to Earth. And it's part of, yeah, it's part of their classwork. And a guy says, look, we've been teaching you about the solar system and galactic references and connections, and draw it on that field down there just for the fun of it. And a kid gets on as, you know, basically a super califragilist. Remember those Etch-a-Sketches? Well, they've got one that's century. No,
you're not trying to tell me that Romney has been doing any of these crop circles, are you?
Oh, God. You know, the humor that's inherent in our situation needs to be brought out, because sometimes the irony is all you can live for,
you know what I mean? You said, oh, God, you were going to mention God as well, so.
Yeah, well, I have this other theory that, you know, since we all have a part of God inside of us, I was thinking it's possible that God has all of us at the same time. So that would determine what God is at any given point in time. And, you know, you can trace all the inconsistencies to the various global thought paradigms that we believe in. You know, the belief structures. As they change, God changes.
So then God could be like a trucker going down I-40.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Why not? He I've is a trucker going yeah, down I-40.
Right. I've got the picture. Okay, well... Very interesting, and I appreciate the lighter side of anything. Trust me. Enjoy it very much. And that was a good Skype call. Okay, let's go to Canada and Craig. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Roswell's Art.
Thank you.
Not so long ago, you had a gentleman on the phone who was trying to pilot his plane over Area 51. I'm just wondering whatever happened to that guy.
Well... It may well be that a railgun shot him down, and he's nothing but dust.
It does seem a bit strange that he was able to use a cell phone, you know, in an airplane. You know, it just came across a bit strange, that was all.
Well, I really appreciated it.
Yeah?
I mean, if he didn't have that cell phone and he had not reached out to me, how would we know anything at all? And how would we be wondering now what became of him?
Well, we don't, do we? We don't know whether he's alive still or he's gone.
Indeed. Where are you, by the way?
Canada.
I got that. But, I mean, where in Canada?
Edmonton. Edmonton in Canada.
Edmonton. All right. And you've got an obvious English accent, so...
I am. I'm an English truck driver in Canada, so...
Yeah. You're an English truck driver in Canada?
Yep.
Fascinating. What brought you all the way across the ocean to... truck here, there?
We just wanted to do it just to say we've done it, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
Make a bit of extra money as well.
Alrighty. I've got a question for you.
Okay, go on.
What is the most evil thing you've ever done?
The most evil thing I've ever done?
That's
I
right.
convinced my wife that I was psychic.
Alright, well, good for you. Thank you for the call. Anybody else? Willing to answer that question is welcome. The most evil thing you have ever done. I don't know why that just popped into my mind, but it did. Ohio brings Uncle Duke.
Hi, Art. How are you?
I'm quite well, Uncle.
Good. Hey, you might find this interesting. I listened to the previous guest talk about Neil Armstrong and such.
Yes.
I knew Neil Armstrong. I'm a late 70s graduate of the University of Cincinnati Aerospace Engineering Program. I'm a retired aerospace engineer with the DOD.
Yes, sir.
And I knew him, you know, as well as a student can know a professor. But we got along famously because we were both airplane guys and both really enjoyed talking airplanes. One time in a group setting, I asked him specifically about the UFO during the Apollo mission. And
right.
He kind of smirked. Everybody talks about how the guy was standoffish and all that. One-on-one, he was very charming, had a very dry sense of humor, great guy. But in a small group setting, he was equally as charming and equally as willing to talk. And there were probably, I don't know, maybe half a dozen of us there, students and himself. And he proceeded to tell the story about, yes, they did look out the windows, and yes, they did see a kind of a sparkling, twinkling, on again, off again kind of light. And they did call back to Houston, and he said, you know, the first thought that it had been the boosters. And he said, but after we talked about that, that made no sense. They were too far away. And he said, we talked about it and talked about it. And he said, there's no question in my mind, and I've never forgotten this. He said, what we saw were the panels from the service module. The service module, if you'll remember, that thing kind of opened up like a flower to allow the command module to turn around and then dock with the lunar module. Mm-hmm. And those panels peeled off, and, you know, momentum being what it is, they kept going, and as they got further away, and of course, I don't remember if there were three or four, but I think there may have been four of them, and they all went, you know, kind of in different directions, because there were four of them pointed in a different direction, and he said, there's no question in my mind, that's what we saw. So, you know,
but he didn't relate anything to you about a craft that had been given to the United States or any other country, or having personally flown any of these craft. Did he?
You know, Art, if Professor Armstrong had said that, he would have done it firmly, tongue-in-cheek. The guy had a great sense of humor. He really did. Very dry. You know, so he could have said something like that, but no, he said nothing like that. He was asked a serious question by a senior in an aerospace engineering graduating class, and he answered it seriously. So for all these people who want to talk about, you know, Neil Armstrong this and Neil Armstrong that, I knew the man. Great guy, you know, and I know how he answered the question because I heard him ask. I heard the question asked, and I heard him answer.
Fair enough. I really appreciate that account. Thank you so very much. So there you have it. Nothing about alien craft and zipping around and piloting them and being instructed in their appropriate use, I guess. I don't know. All of that a little difficult to buy. We're going to have to... Boy, time does fly, doesn't it? My goodness. All right, we'll break here for a moment. When we get back, we'll continue to answer these banks of calls, and you should see them coming in. Holy mackerel. This is Dark Matter. All right. See all those phone lines blinking away there? Skype blinking away, going crazy. I'm going to ask everybody right now on hold the most evil thing they've ever done. So be prepared. And I think we'll begin with Florida and Dave. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Hi. How you doing, Dave?
No, not too bad. Mm-hmm. About 6:30 on October 11th on Highway 160, right at the bottom of Monument Valley, right about 18, 19 miles south of Mexican Hat, Utah. All right, October 11th of this year. There's a wide spot there, and I spent the night there. I drive a truck for a living, and mm-hmm. I spent the night there, and I got up just about sunup. And, you know, I pull a flatbed, so I got out, kicked my tires, everything like that, checked, you know, straps, chains. And about, I'm going to say 1,500 feet, there's that little rise, that little white spot there is on top of a knoll. About 1,500 feet out there, there was an object. I don't know what it was, all right? I don't know if it was one of military aircraft or what, but it was dead quiet, and it was shaped like a spoon without the handle but turned over. And it was a nice silver color, but the bottom of it looked like water. Rippling water.
Oh, that's weird.
Okay. I took 7 pictures of it.
Oh?
Okay.
And? Yes, and? And you have these photographs.
I have these photographs, okay?
Well, may the good Lord bless you.
Hold on a second. The
yes?
object does not appear, but the shadow it creates on the ground does.
Aw. That was such an interesting description that I was hoping for more than a shadow.
Well, hold on. It gets even better.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what it is. I don't I don't believe in UFOs, but, you know, I'm apparently going to have to change my mind or something. But I took pictures of it. I didn't think nothing about it. And probably about 15, 20 seconds after I shot the last picture, it went from a dead hover spot,
mm-hmm.
and about it was about 50 feet in length. It broke the set. It created a sonic boom.
Broke the sound barrier.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to say 50 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And created a vapor ring, in because the air is moist that time of morning down there. Created right. a vapor ring and was gone. I mean, gone. It went down the valley. It didn't gain no altitude, but it went down that valley like you'd shot it out of a gun.
So, Dave, what do you mean you don't believe in UFOs? You don't believe your own eyes?
Well, let me put it to you this way. Before October 11th of this year, I really had serious doubts.
How about now?
Well, I saw something. I have no idea. I don't know if it was something we had.
You just don't want to believe, do you, Dave?
Well, you know, I don't think we have the technology for the inertial dampers unless it was an unmanned aircraft. There's no way a human body could take that type of stress.
And so from that, what do you conclude?
It ain't from here.
If it ain't from here, and it did what you said, then, Dave, you got to believe.
Yeah, I do that.
Hey, Dave, what's the most evil thing you've ever done?
Spike the opposite water bottle, the opposite team's water bottle when I was in high school.
You spiked whose water bottle?
Football team we were playing.
You spiked the entire team?
Well, we spiked their coolers.
Their coolers? That would be virtually everybody then, huh?
Pretty much everybody on the other team.
Yeah, how was the game?
We lost. We always lose.
All right, Dave, thank you. Good answer. Really good answer. Let's go to Michael on Skype. Michael, hello.
How you doing?
Better by the minute, Michael.
Art?
Yes.
I want to start out by saying okay. Raging vertebrae.
Yes, you're going to have to rage a little closer to the mic because you're dropping out.
My question was, I've always tried to put myself in position to see a UFO. Spent some time out by your house at Dumont Dunes. Rode to the top of the dunes and sat there for hours looking out. And
Michael, I would like to state right now that my house is not a good place to see a UFO. I'm trying to discourage this activity.
Well, Dumont Dunes is really close.
It is very close.
And boy, it's just amazing how clear it is out there. But I do believe, I want to believe, and I just know they're out there.
And you just really want to see one, right?
Oh, more than you could ever imagine. Matter of fact, I used to take my radio up there and listen to you on KDON.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, stay away from my house, Michael.
Okay.
All right. See you later. Thank you. People come to me. And it's pretty easy to recognize because, well, first of all, of course, my house is fenced. But people, it's a dead-end road, so you can't miss them. They come cruising by very, very slowly, and then they stop at the end of the road, you know, dead end, and they turn around, and they come back, and very, very slowly they're moving. And then usually they stop. You see a camera eke out the window and take a number of photographs, and then eventually they continue on. It's a little strange, but we've learned to sort of live with it. Hello there in New Jersey. Holly, how are you?
Yes, good. How are you?
Just spiffy.
I just want to tell you, you are a radio god.
No, I'm not.
I love you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. A god I am not, though.
Trust me. Two parts, actually. Years ago, I was going through some of my mother's papers, and I found a letter that she had wrote. And in the letter, she had stated that she actually seen a UFO.
Right.
Well, I never knew anything of this, so I questioned her about it. And she was very reluctant, you know, to tell me the story, but she finally did. And she said that she had seen a UFO and that it was very quiet, and it actually looked like it was sucking electricity out of the power lines. And I wanted to know.
You know, and driving up everybody's electric bill.
Yes. but have you ever heard of anything like that, where they've actually siphoned electricity?
Seen it in the movies.
In the movies, yeah. Well, she said she's seen it, and she swears it, but, you know, I didn't see it for myself, so I'm not sure, but that's what she says.
One day I'll walk out on my back porch, and I'll see this giant saucer sucking up from my big antenna.
Also, to the other part, when you had talked about, like, why the aliens are here and so forth, and people are saying it's because of our soul or because they want to breed with us.
Yes, yes.
You know, every animal on Earth we study. Every animal, regardless
right.
of what it is, we study it.
Right.
I think it's the same thing for them. We're an animal, so they study us. And I don't think it's any special reason. I think it's just because we're here.
Do you want to hear something really creepy?
Sure.
Scientists right now, Holly, are growing stem cells. They're taking human stem cell, or I guess actually not. They are human, but they're embryonic stem cells. And they are growing them in cultures. And what they're getting is creatures, humans, but with a brain and other human parts, but no heart. And so these things are dying very quickly. There's no heart to propel the blood around. So they're not getting bigger than a pinhead, but they're growing things from embryonic stem cells. Now, is that creepy or what?
Oh, very creepy. Scary.
It is scary. It scares me even. I heard that earlier today. I'm going to try and find a guest on that. They're doing some pretty creepy stuff with stem cells.
Very scary. Also, what do you think about people that are Rh negative? There's some talk on the internet about people that are Rh negative possibly having some alien connection with the reptile aliens and so forth.
I think they mostly should be gathered together and dissected. I don't know. What's the most evil thing you've ever done?
A friend of mine was going to throw a party for me, and I went to his house, and he was all drunk, and there were people there I didn't know, and I was about 17 years old, and the rest of them were about 17 years old, and I left in a huff, and I actually called the cops on him. Underage drinking.
Pretty cold, and a good answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Yeah, you have a good night. Take care. That's funny. All right. Duncan, I think it is. I don't know. On Skype, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, how you doing, Art?
Good to have you. Where are you?
I'm in a parking lot in Cincinnati, Ohio, in a truck.
Just hanging out in the parking lot. All right.
Yeah, doing whatever.
Okay.
To answer your question, the first question, the most evil thing I've ever done, I was a firebug when I was a kid. So,
really?
I set a couple apartment buildings on fire.
Oh, my God.
Luckily, nobody got hurt, and I outgrew that.
Those were occupied or unoccupied?
They were occupied.
Occupied.
Yeah, I got caught.
You did get caught?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Luckily for the people.
That's fairly evil.
Live there.
Yep, that's fairly evil. You win so far.
Well, I feel bad about it now.
I do too.
I also haven't. I've never seen a UFO.
Uh huh.
I've traveled 5 million miles.
And because of your evil ways.
I think so. I feel kind of lucky for that. And also, I had another question that's unrelated. There was a lady who used to explore caves.
Bonnie Crystal.
Yeah, will you have her back on anytime soon?
It's a good question, and I'll see if Bonnie's around. But, yeah, she's a fascinating lady, huh? She lived a very long time in Hong Kong, and we used to chat while she was in Hong Kong, and I was in Manila, and we used to get on the internet and chat. So I'll see what if I can reach out to Bonnie. All right.
Well, it's been great talking to you. I'm so great you're back.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Oh, those poor people. Two apartment buildings. Oof. Okay, so on Skype, I'm art.bell51. That's art.bell51. That was scary. Hello there in Colorado. Gary, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, Art?
It's going pretty well, actually.
I have a kind of similar story to the Iron Hand.
It's
not necessarily the Iron Hand, but some years back when me and my wife was together, I was at the house, I was off of work, and I was really, really bored and full of energy.
Right.
A friend of mine called me and said, hey, come on over, we're having a get-together, going to be some drinks, there's going to be all my family here and everything, it's going to be really fun. I said, of course, not a problem. So as I was getting ready to head over there and go over there, man, I got this, like, weird feeling. And all my energy drained. This is a true story now. All my energy drained. Like, I just got exhausted for some reason. I never called him back. I never called back and said I wasn't coming. I just didn't show up.
Okay.
The next morning, I woke up, and I called them, and I was told by my friend that the house got shot up.
Shot up? You mean like a drive-by?
No, it wasn't a drive-by. They had some guys that was over there that they didn't know, but they let them in the party anyway.
Oh my God.
Were just not good, and they shot up. They shot up the household, which is funny to me, which makes me think about it, is that nobody died. A couple of people did get shot. Nobody died. But I always think to myself, if I was there, would I have been the one person that have died?
So it's like you had a guardian energy sucker.
Yeah, I don't know. I really can't explain it, but it was really weird. I sat around the house all day long just watching TV, and I was really, really bored. And I was like, I got to do something. And then all of a sudden, when I got ready to go do this,
there's no question TV can suck the life right out of you.
Yeah, you're right. But I just got all my energy drained in.
I hear you.
I'm glad I didn't go.
I'm glad you didn't go, too. A guardian energy sucker. Let's go to Michigan and Dean. Hello, Dean.
Hi, Art. Second-time callers and mega dittos, mega Roswells from Belgab.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not calling about any kind of angels or portals. I got a good old-fashioned bizarre aerial phenomena to tell you about.
Okay.
I was my second year out of college back in 1978, and I happened to get up at about 9:30. I was on my bike, and being a 19-year-old, I didn't have a car at that point. And I was just biking along the road, and it's up in the Upper Peninsula, Michigan, pretty rural area there. Biking along, and I saw something out of the side of my eye. And so I turned and looked off to my left, and there, about 5 feet away from me, floating along at the same speed that I was biking was what I will call it is a silver ball bearing. It was about the size of a croquet ball, exactly at my head level, about, like I said, 5 feet away, almost like a mirror. It was so, it was just so shiny. And just cruising along, and my jaw dropped. I'm biking along, and I didn't know what to think of it. And it shot up in the air, and my head whipped up to follow it. I could just kind of see it disappearing up, and at that point, I lost sight of it because I went off the road and smashed into the bushes. And so got off the bike, looked around, couldn't see anything, and being a scientific kind of person, I got on my bike, and I went through about 3-4 times that same route trying to look for something that might have reflected off my glasses or something like that, but nothing.
So you had an encounter with a ball bearing.
That's what I call it. I actually call it croquet. It was about the size of a croquet ball. I was big in a croquet back then. So, but yeah, it, it, so floating along right next to me, and I was stunned. I don't know. It's kind of bizarre. I didn't tell too many people about it at the time because I kind of thought, you know, they're going to think I was doing something.
They might have.
Yeah.
They might have, Dean. Speaking of doing something, the most evil thing you've ever done is?
Marry my ex-wife.
At least you mean again?
No. Well, that's what she said after we got divorced. That was the most evil thing I did. So.
I see. All right. Thank you very much, and take care. And let's go to Skype. And Guy, I guess, and Sonia?
Yeah. Hi, Art.
Hi.
I was thinking back to the first show that you did and had Michio Kaku on.
You mean the first show on Dark Matter, yes.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
I'm not that old, aren't
Thank you.
Anyway, he had changed his odds. He laid 50%.
Absolutely, yes.
On us reaching a Type 1 civilization.
Yeah, you know what it was originally, years ago? It was 100-1.
And so I wondered if his changing the odds had anything to do with your show coming back on the air.
Yes, that was the reason. You've guessed it.
Yeah. Along those lines, I wanted to sort of say hi to other folks over on Belgab who sort of carried the flame all these years you were away, and wondered if maybe somehow unintentionally we'd done a mass consciousness experiment over there.
And I'm the victim.
Right, exactly.
Maybe. Who knows? I mean, I would be the last person to reject such a possible scenario. So, yeah, maybe. Maybe. It's a vicious but vaguely lovable group.
Right, exactly. Can I turn this on you and ask you what's the most evil thing you've done?
Oh, man. How rude is that to ask a question like that, Justin? On the fly. I've done so many. You're going to have to give me some time to think about it. I guess...
I'll take my answer off here.
Okay, and you'll get it off the air indeed. There have been so many. I remember that when I was in high school, I was required to take home ec, which I thought at the time was cruel and unusual punishment of the very worst kind. And we wrecked that class. I mean, we wrecked it. We all the guys, we're guys required to take home ec, right? We poisoned each other's food. I mean, and the teacher would come around and sample this stuff afterward. You know, there'd be a good cup full of salt where it shouldn't be, that kind of thing. It was really awful. It was a failure. I don't know if high schools now do this sort of thing. Still, today, I would imagine they do. They give guys a little taste of what it's like to have to cook and girls a little taste of auto shop or something. But it didn't work. It was, you know, the first time they had tried something like that. And we utterly destroyed the whole program. The most evil thing I've ever done, that probably doesn't qualify, but it came to mind immediately. All right, let me see. Let's go to California and Scott. Hi, Scott.
Hello. Mega 88201s to you.
And what does that mean?
That is the zip code of Roswell.
Oh, so very good.
Anyway, do you want the evil story or do you want the reason I called about UFOs?
Well, let's start with the reason you called.
Okay, I think you said or someone said earlier that they thought that people coming to visit are interested in our souls.
Yes.
Which makes me wonder, what is a soul? And I've always heard that it's comprised of the mind, the will, and the emotion, which if you look at that verse in the Bible that says, you know, what does it profit a person to gain the whole world yet lose his own soul? Or in this case, lose his own mind, will, and emotions, it right. seems to make pretty good sense. But if they're really interested in our souls, and our souls are indeed the mind, the will, and the emotions, mm-hmm. they don't have a whole lot to pick from. You talk about the remnant men. I mean, the world is going crazy at a hair-raising clip. So,
boy, you got that right.
I think, you know, the more I think about this thing about seeding, and that Adam and Eve was a fairy tale, what if we're just a big experiment and they check in from time to time just to see how we're doing? I mean, it's depressing.
Well, then at some point in the not too distant future, we're going to get vaporized because they're going to look down and they're going to say, what have we done? Zap.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really worried about that.
Trying to find a way out of the mess that they've caused, if indeed that's all it actually is a big experiment that's gone amok.
Or maybe the God of the Bible is real, and he'll look down and say, fail, and zap.
Or he could be a guy driving a truck across, you know, up 81 or something.
I-40, and just presses a button, zap.
Okay. That's the serious thing. The most evil thing I did was more funny than evil, but it was evil. In 73, I had my first radio job at a little FM station about 50 miles outside of D.C. And we had to play certain records, and even the people on the air didn't always care for the records. Well, I had one guy who every time I played the night the lights went out in Georgia would call in and just raise the devil with me. Couldn't stand that song. And he said, you know, if you ever play it again, I'll never listen again. And I said, well, sir, I don't know if you're aware of the consequences of that action, but we're licensed by the Federal Communications Commission to operate this radio station.
Right.
With an antenna height of whatever it was, a wattage of whatever it was, effective radiated power of 3,000 watts, which means we can only accommodate a certain number of listeners at any one time. So you're free to tune out if you want, but I can't guarantee that you're going to be able to tune back in if you decide later you want to. And I paused. And about 10 seconds later, he said, well, okay, I'll let it go this time.
Not bad. Not overly evil, but not bad. I did much worse on the radio. In fact, even recently. Let's try Skype. Boy, not a good connection here. Kenny, hello.
Hello,
You're all distorted, Kenny. It's I see something that says I'd rather be killing zombies.
Yes, I would rather be killing zombies.
I bet you would. And with audio like that, they're probably going down fast. Get away from your mic a little bit there, Kenny.
Gotcha.
Usually I have to say the other way around, but you're really pumping some audio there, my friend. So what's up?
Roswell, it's good to hear you again on the radio, and that's all I wanted to say.
All right. Well, I appreciate the call. You said it. Take care. And I think some people sometimes just want to see if they can get through. Yes, you can get through. But be prepared to answer the question about evil. To Dave in Florida. Hello, Dave.
How are you, Art?
Very well. Thank you.
First-time caller, a long-time listener. I grew up over in Vegas, over the hill from you. My dad was on the Air Force Base. We lived on Nellis from 77 to, I think, about 81. And do you know where Sheephead Mountain is? From
what? What mountain?
Sheephead Mountain.
Sheephead. I've heard of it. I don't know where it is.
It's kind of... I guess northwest of the base, on the other, in between, I think, 95 or,
Right.
I had me and my brothers and three other friends. I loved to explore when I was a kid, and I used to see snow on that mountain occasionally. Well, I had a bright idea one morning. I got my brothers together and my neighbors. And we took a hike, and we ended up going all the way to the base of the mountain. Are you there?
I'm here.
And they ended up calling search and rescue, make a long story short. And They had Metro Search and Rescue, the Air Force Search and Rescue out looking for us. And me and a friend of mine were the only one that stayed kind of back at the mountain, deciding, hey, we're going to just spend the night here, where my brothers decided to try to make it home. Search and Rescue picked them up. We ended up seeing lights towards Mount Charleston area, you know, from where we're walking back towards the base. And it was real scary because these lights, they didn't look like UFOs, you know, big, huge UFOs in the air. They were more or less like about the size of, you know, a Volkswagen. And there were several of them. And as a kid growing up on the base at nighttime, we used to see lights out there quite a bit in the distance and didn't know what they were. But
I wonder if VW size UFOs get better mileage.
I don't know. But we ended up walking towards where the lights were, thinking that, you know, it was going towards the base. And we actually, we were walking, you know, towards Mount Charleston, you know what I mean? And they ended up finding us, and we made it on the news. And I got in trouble, you know, quite a bit for dragging everybody around. But
does this correlate with the most evil thing you've ever done?
The most evil thing I ever did was I dressed my little brother up as a girl when we would go to the movies. I used to take him and dress him up as a girl, and the lady that worked at the movie theater just thought that was so cute. I always got to go hit the movie theater for free because he thought that was my little sister I was bringing with me.
I see.
My brother's pretty happy. He doesn't even like talking about that.
Too bad there aren't pictures. I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you. Thank you very much. And over to Skype we go. And Andrew.
Hi, this is your friend Andy from Melbourne, Australia.
How you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I wanted to know, are you doing the New Year's Eve special show this year?
Am I doing any special show?
On New Year's Eve.
Oh, on New Year's Eve. Predictions. You're talking about predictions.
Yes.
Inevitably, I'm sure I will be. If I'm here on New Year's Eve, I'm sure I'll be doing it. But since you might not get in, Andrew, if you need to make a prediction for 2014.
No, I don't know.
Yes. What would you predict for 2014?
I predict, I'll predict the downfall of the other show, the show that must not be named. Hopefully I get a ding, ding, ding.
Nah, I don't think so. I don't think so. Maybe, you know, dogs and cats will make up and everybody will get along and the world will be. What's the most evil thing you ever did?
The most evil thing I ever did. I did a similar thing to my sister, what the last caller did to his brother. I dressed my sister up as a boy once.
Oh, my God, I forgot about my sister. I can top you, Andrew. I did something pretty awful to my sister. This was when I first began playing with electricity. You know, I was pretty young. And I wired up an electric chair. I took a regular chair, and I wired her up. Bear in mind, I was very young. She was way younger. But I had her all set to plug her into the wall. I was just discovering electricity and wire, and I thought it'd be a cool idea. So I had her wired. And, of course, gee, this brings up all kinds of things. I also wired up the doorknob to my room, and I had a metal thing that you would have to stand on if you were, you know, in front of my door, so that when you knocked or touched the door, along with hopefully either bare or socks on, you received a terrible jolt. And so I did play an awful lot around with electricity when I was young. Now, I did not plug my sister in, but I did get pretty close, actually. Nevada has Mike coming our way. Hello, Mike.
Hey, what's up, Bart? How are you doing today?
Just spiffy.
Well, first time caller, I just want to say, before I actually ask a couple questions, I was going to say, you know, big fan. I actually stumbled across, I found out about you through YouTube. I stumbled across some of your videos just when I was surfing through YouTube a couple months back, and then found out you're off the radio through Wikipedia, then found out you were back on the radio. It's just, it's cool to actually be able to talk to you, though, so I wanted to say that.
Well, thank you.
But one question I was going to ask and then I was going to respond and comment was, what did you think of Timothy Good? I thought he was, was he as credible as some of the other people you've had on, some of the other guests that you've had on? What do you say? Is he respected, I guess?
You're asking me, do I think he was as credible as others?
Yeah.
I don't think he was as credible as some and as credible as some others. I have had a very wide range of guests on this program. And so that would be my answer. I'm not as credible as some and as credible as others.
Yeah, I thought he was, I thought some of the stuff he said was pretty far-fetched. And to be completely honest, I'm not trying to be one of those debunkers from what the way he put it. It's just, to me, some of the stuff that he was trying to describe, at least like the whole telepathic stuff. Like, I mean, and this is my
I'm with you all the way. Look, I'm with you all the way. Timothy Good has a very long and distinguished reputation in ufology. And so I guess I would say I was surprised at the way he laid some of this out tonight. It was pretty tough, really tough.
I agree. What was really weird about it was, this is the way I always look at it. If you're really looking hard enough for something, you're going to find it. And I think, you know, how he said that he sat down and he telepathically sent out a message to everybody passing through the hotel or whatever. How many hotels has he gone to and done that? And then, you know, I mean, to me, that's all I'm trying to say is, you know, if you're looking hard enough to find something and that's your career, your life, you're going to run into something that's to you seem versus whoever is doing that is going to seem abnormal or paranormal or out of this world. And I'm not trying to say that he's uncredible. Like you said, I looked him up online and he seems, you know, like a respectable guy in his field and everything like that. And I'm not
he's
saying
all
he
of
is.
That.
And I'm well, not saying he is.
Right. He's all of that, sir. Look, I had the same reaction. Now, you don't argue with somebody who said, look, I saw this really cute girl, and I sent her a mental message, and she came over and curtsied. That's what he said, right? I don't think I'm getting that wrong. Well, there's nothing to argue with, and there's nothing to say, oh, gee. But there's nothing to confirm it either. I have attempted to send out messages like that to cute girls. I mean, not trying to get a curtsy, mind you, but a message sent, definitely. All right, let me see. Let's go here. North Carolina and Stephen. You're in my birth state, Stephen.
Hi, how are you doing? Roswell.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. I was calling about the new life form found in our sewer system.
Oh, God. Did you actually watch that?
Yes, sir, I did. And I was wondering, like, how could this be created?
I don't think we want to know. I mean, that thing looked disgusting.
Yeah, it really did. I was like, is that a leech or is it?
I don't think it was a leech. I have no idea. It was disgusting.
Period and stuff, and it makes me not even want to drink no water no more.
Well, of course, you shouldn't be sampling water from the sewer anyway, but whatever it was growing down there, I don't want anything to do with it, and it was just icky.
Yeah, nasty.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Oh, and you're in North Carolina, too, aren't you?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Uh-huh. Good luck, because you know what? That thing will probably grow.
They're like the blob.
Yeah, get some form of legs, maybe. First thing you know, you're asleep late at night, and well, there you go.
And up through my sink comes a blob.
Or yeah. Maybe, hey, worse yet, how about your bathtub?
Oh, my God, not while I'm in there. Not while I'm taking a shower.
Yeah, while you're taking a shower. Oh, go on. Listen, everybody, that thing is awful. I don't know what it is. They say it's growing in a sewer in North Carolina. Take a look at it. It's moving. It's alive. It does not have arms, legs, head, or anything like that. It just looks like disgusting tissue, I guess is the way I would put it. Oh, it's awful. But it sort of pulsates a little bit. And in view of where it grew and or was, I hate to use the word, born, came into existence. Anyway, I'm done with this. If you want to see it, go take a look yourself. On Skype, you're on the air. Hello, Jason.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine, sir. Where are you?
I'm in just outside of Brandon, Manitoba, just west of Winnipeg.
Okay. A tasty Canadian.
That's right. That's right. I'm driving cross country here.
Okay.
And I find I was wondering what if somebody's actually figured out the actual numbers as far as UFO sightings in the summer compared to the rest of the year.
Why?
Well,
I'm gonna go out on a limb here. I'm gonna say more in the summer. And the reason there's more in the summer is because people are outside doing stuff in the summer and they look up occasionally.
I completely agree with that. However, the reason I'm calling, remember a few years ago, actually no, it was as recent, I think it's 2 years ago, there was a huge UFO sighting all over this part of Canada, and it was huge heavy lights, and it was seen from all of Manitoba throughout Saskatchewan. Do you remember that?
I actually do remember it, and yes. I remember the reports of it, yes.
Yeah, it made mainstream media and everything. I just found that really remarkable just because it's not, you know, a guy in his backyard looking up at the sky. You know,
gotcha. What is the most evil thing you've ever done, Jason?
Well, I'd have to say it's something I currently do, and that is white lies.
It's what?
Telling white lies. I can't escape from it. I don't know why.
I understand. In other words, you cannot make somebody feel poorly. So
that's right.
So you will tell little lies to make them feel better, no matter what.
And I was brought up not to lie, mm-hmm. and I promised my mom that I would never lie. But to tell her that I don't lie is a lie itself.
I understand. Well, white lies almost don't qualify as evil, frankly, Jason. But I do appreciate the effort at it, but white lies. How about the rest of you? Do you do that? Do you tell little white lies? Let me give you an example. Ham radio. I'm a ham radio operator, right? Ham radio operators are consistently asking each other, how's my signal, right? It's an obvious question. So all you've got is your signal. So most times, more times than not, you will hear one operator ask another, and the other operator will always say, 5x5, some of the best audio I've ever heard, when it's patently untrue. I mean, the guy just sounds terrible. But somehow or another, people feel compelled to give good reports. Absolutely compelled. Right now, I'm compelled to take a break. Open lines, anything you want to talk about is fair game. I'm Art Bell, and this is Dark Matter. Lines, anything you want to talk about, absolutely fair game. And I keep looking at the wait times here, trying to pick the appropriate people.
Yep,
Nate in
one.
Utah, hello there.
Hey, how's it going, Art?
It's going real well.
Marvelous. Simply marvelous. The name's Nate. Most people just call me Rumble Strips MacGyver, but I have an interesting couple stories for you if you got a minute.
I do.
It wasn't exactly the worst. Well, depends on your point of view. Funniest, maybe. You ever heard the song Phantom 309?
No.
By Red Savine?
No.
Okay. If you ever get a chance, take a listen to it. It's pretty good. It's interesting. Well, the story behind it was, I'm an over-the-road truck driver. I also train students. One of my best friends was my student. And I was asleep in the back, and what I had, I have a CB radio in the truck, and I had a handheld CB radio that I would use to be able to sit outside and talk to him and help him back up.
Right.
Well, one evening I woke up, and he was driving across Wyoming on Interstate 80, and there was hardly any traffic out there, so I noticed that my radio was on, and so I turned on my handheld. And, break 19 for radio check, and he answered it. Uh-huh. And we talked for about half an hour, 45 minutes, and he realized the signal hadn't changed. Well, truck drivers, you're out of 2-3 mile range, the
Absolutely.
Signal weakened.
Sure.
Well, anyway, he asked me where I was at, and I said, well, I'm right next to you. And he's like, no, really, seriously, where are you at? And I said, no, I'm serious, right next to you, which I wasn't lying, technically behind you. I said, turn on your overhead light. And he turns it on and says, well, you're wearing a hat. You got a pack of cigarettes on that thing. You're wearing a yellow shirt. And he reaches up and turns off the light. And I said, well, let me kind of explain. This is back in 1976. I was driving down this road. It was a horrible snowstorm at mile marker, I think it was 377, just outside of Laramie. I had, told him that there was a school bus of kids that had spun out on the interstate, and I accidentally hit them and killed them, including myself. And, the higher power basically told me I'm cursed to the roads until I save all the souls that I've taken. And wow. he asked me what my handle was, and I was sitting there trying to think of a really good handle. And I knew the question was coming up because I set him up for the question. But anyway...
Yeah.
He asked the question, and the only thing that blurted out of my mouth was Ghost Rider. Now I'm sitting there banging my head on the walkie-talkie going, gee, that was original. But anyways, he bought it.
Yeah.
He had a weird look on his face the next morning, and everybody at the truck stop has pretty much heard the song Phantom 309, and they, truck drivers talk, so we just kind of ran with it. Well, that was the whole bit there. The odd thing I saw was, ironically, in Utah. Yes, right turn. Turn right here. And at mile marker 56 on Interstate 80, it wasn't exactly dark, but it wasn't light out. It was good dusk.
Gotcha.
And I saw it was on the southbound side of the interstate, and there was an orb that lit up. It's about a mile off of the road, probably about 200-300 feet above the ground. And you could see around the orb. You can see behind
it. Okay, you gotta hurry. We're running out of time.
Okay. Well, what happened is one appeared next to it, one appeared above, and it just five straight up in a column, and they all disappeared. I was just curious, has anybody else seen that before? Have a good one.
All right, take care. Keep it together out there. On the road, definitely. And by the way, the prize might go to Lori. I don't know where Lori is, but she sends me a wormhole message that the most evil thing she ever did was typing out an IRS audit letter to her sister. Ooh. That might be the winner so far. I'm not sure, but it might be the winner. We're out of time, leaving the lines all full. I love open lines. I really do. Y'all be good now, and I'll see you next week. Good night.